This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation Pops, Looking Forward, Looking Back, the show that takes a look at the worlds of pop culture and sports, as well as looking back at events and seasons of the past. Here is your host, Andy Atherton.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome to another episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back. I am your host, Andy Atherton, and thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight, we're going to take a look back at the movies that came out this past fall and winter of 2018. Lots of great stuff came out, a lot of Oscar buzz, a lot of blockbusters. You know, the fall, winter, that's a great time for movies if you're a movie fan. And if you were here for the first episode of Looking Forward, Looking Back, we covered these movies and we kind of like gave our thoughts on what we wanted to see and what we were interested in. So I brought back a couple of the people that joined me on that first show. I got the band back together. First off, let me introduce a lovely lady. She is the co-host of Geek and Sassy, the co-host of Talkin' Pop, the co-host of Talkin' WCW, and the host of Freak Out Drive, Miss Jennifer Smith. Jenny, thank you for joining me tonight.
Hey, Andy. Thank you for having me. And a fine lady is maybe pushing it a little bit, but I'll allow it this time.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to call you a fine lady. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to insult you. Jeez.
No, I'm just saying it's a little generous.
Yeah, you're kind of pushing it. I know. Anyway, also joining us tonight is my co-host on Year in Pop. He is also the co-host over on the wrestling feed of the Place to Be podcast, The Mothership, and co-host on The Main Event, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Scott, thank you for joining us tonight.
The way you should have said it, Andy, is fine, lady, because that's probably what she's used to hearing.
No. Damn, girl, you fine.
Fine, baby. So, anyway, Andy, good to be with you. It was a good season of movies. I didn't see as many as I was hoping to, but I did see a decent amount. So we'll definitely get into some of the good ones and some of the ones that I have, you know, on my pre-order for Blu-ray purchase or watch on something. I'm sure it'll hit. Mm-hmm. Netflix needs to start building their cachet again after slowly losing all of the Star Wars and Marvel and everything else. So they're going to need to kind of build the cachet of movies up. So I'm sure we'll see a lot of the stuff hitting there soon. I know, yeah. Some of the Blu-rays are out. Some will come out, I think, in April. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to talking about some of the better movies that came out over the last 6 months.
Yeah, so also we had Mr. Glenn Butler on that show. Glenn is more into talking about movies based on trailers. So Glenn was unable to join us tonight. But you're going to hear Glenn and me soon on the Pop Feed. So stay tuned for that. So let's dive into it. So back in October, October used to be kind of a down month. But looking at the list we have to go on tonight, we have a lot of great movies came out that some made, you know, Oscar appearances. Others were some surprises. So we'll start off with A Star is Born. Now, if you listen to the Oscar pod that I was on with Jenny's co-host, Miranda Berthaud of Geek and Sassy, along with Jason Sherman and Andrew Reich, we talked about that quite a bit. And Star is Born didn't do as well at the Oscars as people had thought. I mean, it did take home the one award that everybody knew it was going to take, which was Lady Gaga for Best Original Song for Shallow. But Scott, you saw Star is Born, right?
No. Oh, you sorry. Don't see an S next to that on the document, do you? I've already blown this. No.
All right, I thought it was just with us. So I'm the only one that saw Star is Born, in other words.
Yeah, so I had a lot of intentions of watching this movie, and then I think about maybe the week that it came out or whenever the soundtrack came out on Spotify, I listened to it. I love the soundtrack, but this is like a quirk of me, but mm-hmm. like some movies, and I think I said this on that first Looking Forward, Looking Back, but it's very like a very emotional movie. Mm-hmm. And so I have to be sort of in the right frame of mind to kind of go into a movie like that. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of never was. Like, I never felt fully emotionally prepared to be wrecked, because from what I, you know, saw from the reviews and a lot of my friends, they were like, you know, I sobbed throughout this movie and it was highly emotional and the performances were amazing. And so it made me want to see it, but like, I didn't feel ready to see it. So I never did. And I don't know if I will. I don't know if maybe I could just do it like alone in my house so I can just sob quietly and not publicly. But I think that as far as the Oscars go, it sort of won the Oscars as a show with all of the hoopla about the performance there, the mm-hmm. live performance.
Oh, yeah.
Gaga.
Oh, it was tremendous. Did you see any of the previous Starsborns? I don't know if we talked about this in the first
show. Yeah, actually, I saw my favorite one is the Judy Garland one.
Okay. It's fairly, kind of formulaic follows. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fun movie. I mean, I got taken a little out of it with Bradley Cooper doing his best, I'm spacing out. But he sounded just like his brother, Sam Elliott. Yeah, I'm like, why does he sound so much like Sam Elliott? Then all of a sudden, Sam Elliott shows up as his brother. I'm like, okay, maybe. But no, I would give it a watch, though. I mean, you know, yeah, you're going to cry at the end, but, you know, it's what happens to movies sometimes. So also coming out around the same time was Venom. Now, Jenny, I know you saw Venom.
I did.
So why don't you give us some thoughts on Venom?
Okay, so everybody pretty much going into Venom had, like, very harsh words to say about it based on the trailer and I guess maybe their own predisposed ideas of what it was going to be. I personally loved the shit out of that movie because I thought that the symbiotic relationship between Eddie Brock and Venom was amazing. I thought the acting was amazing. There were some great action scenes, the chase scene in particular, some great snappy dialogue. And at the end, you know, you get your typical superhero, anti-hero CGI fest at the end. But it honestly didn't bother me. There are lots of, like, nitpicky things about the movie. But overall, I just thought it exceeded expectations quite a bit for me. I absolutely loved it, honestly.
Yeah, I think you hit the right on the nose. Like, I went in with very low expectations myself, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was a lot of fun. It didn't take itself too seriously, mm-hmm. which when we all have seen when superhero movies take themselves too seriously, it kind of really sucks. And it was a lot of fun. I like the campiness, and, you know, I mean, I don't read comics, as everybody knows, but I don't know what if they did, you know, right by the character of Venom, but you know, and then they, you know, teased the next movie with the post credit right. scene with
tremendous, yeah.
You know, when the thing about superhero movies though that really I love is that you get these high quality actors in there because mm-hmm. they all start to like, oh, I want to play. Like, you never thought you'd see Glenn Close or, you know, or we just saw Annette Bening or Woody Harrelson. I mean, maybe Woody, but, you know, you never thought you'd see these guys show up in a superhero movie. And, you know, even if it's a small part, they, you know, have so much fun with it. Scott, is Venom one of the ones you're going to seek out on Blu-ray video streaming?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I just didn't get it right. I didn't get a chance to see it. But, no, I'll definitely see it. It's I don't listen to reviews and stuff when I go into a movie. I usually go into, I like going into everything cold and just generate your own opinions. I agree with Jenny on that. And, yeah, I mean, anything, that's, you know, a lot of people just are diehard Marvelites and feel that this was like, you know, infringing on their, you know, blessed canon or whatever, but you know what? They're allowed to do what they want. They didn't get sold. It's not part of that whole package, so they do what they want. I know a couple people at my job that saw it and said it was fine for what it was. I have very forgiving movie fans. They're not ridiculously picky on a lot of stuff like that. They don't get into like the whole drama with, you know, fans of brands and stuff. But I'll definitely watch it. That might be something I see before I buy it. But if I like it enough, I'll get it. But I'll definitely wait till it goes on like Amazon Prime or Netflix. But I'll definitely see it.
Oh yeah,
I can't account for the rewatchability of it, but definitely, definitely a fun watch. For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. My kids enjoyed it too as well, and they're super into the superhero as Marvel stuff. All right, so then after that we had Bad Times at the El Royale, which I'm the only one that saw that, thanks to MoviePass Cinemia or whatever the hell I used at the time. I thought it was fun. It was a decent movie. It was kind of Tarantino-esque, I guess you want to say. You know, everything takes place at this one resort. It's a takeoff of the Cal Neva Resort, which is on the California-Nevada border where the Rat Pack used to hang out a lot. And, you know, everybody was there. I mean, what was it called? Jeff Bridges is in it.
Bridges,
and
yeah.
He was hamming up. Chris Hemsworth shows up as a cult leader. And he was a lot of fun, and he just enjoyed, you know, doing his thing. And it was one of those movies where, like, you know, you start to see everything tie together and all their stories kind of, like, intertwine and how they kind of all ended up at the same place. Mm-hmm. So, that's something I would definitely recommend watching on a streaming service when it hits there or on the HBO or something. So also coming out was First Man. Now, Jenny, you saw First Man. What'd you think of it?
I did. Okay, so I think I said this before, but I have like a real hard on for like NASA stories, mm-hmm. And then of course Ryan Gosling, kind of can't help but have a hard on for him. So,
well, I can't.
But I thought this was not what I expected. Mm-hmm. A little bit slower paced, sort of I don't want to say. It was definitely character based as opposed to like major event based, like mm-hmm. you would expect it to be. So it was interesting in that regard, but perhaps a little slow for me. Very well done though. The cinematics were great. The sound was great. It was very visceral, sort of, even just watching it at home. So like in a like in a theater setting, I could see how you would be like really absorbed in it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It moves slow. I mean, I think I probably saw it like on a Tuesday night, like at 9 o'clock. So, you know, I'm a little tired going in. And the fact that it kind of built slowly. I mean, it's a great story. I mean, Damien Chazelle is a good a director. And, you know, I thought Gosling did okay. And Claire Foy played his wife. She was fine. The whole scene with the when the rocket exploded that killed Gus Grissom and them.
Grissom,
that was really well done, that whole scene.
It was.
But I mean I don't know if I'll rewatch it, but I thought it was a good movie. Scott, was that one that was on your list as well to see?
Maybe. I like space movies, particularly biopics. I'm 50-50 on Ryan Gosling, but again, that's another one that if it's on Amazon Prime, maybe I'll check it out. But yeah, I mean, A, it's a pseudo biopic, and B, it's about space. So that's two things. That's two checkoffs right there for me. So yeah, no, I would definitely check it out, you know, streaming at some point when it comes up. It might already have come up and I haven't even checked it out yet.
Yeah, I mean, it did win an Oscar, one for visual effects, and it beat out, you know, Avengers Infinity War, Christopher Robin, Ready Player One, and Solo, A Star Wars Story. So, I mean, I would say
that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for Infinity War, but that's just me.
Yeah. But, the next movie, which is right down your guys' alley, not mine really. I mean, I don't hate horror, just is not my go-to usually, but the Halloween, I guess, what would it call it? A requel, I guess you want to call it, maybe, where it picked, well, yeah, it's like a remake slash sequel where it kind of picks up the story later on and kind of reboots it, gives it like a little kick in the ass to get going. So, Scott, what did you think of the Halloween that came out back in October?
I wouldn't say that. I'd like to correct you on that.
Okay,
I wouldn't
go
say
ahead.
It was a kick in, I wouldn't say it was a kick in the butt. I think I was confused at first. We talked about this on the when we did the preview of it.
Yeah.
I remember obviously because this horror I guess anthology or franchise has been very strange because it's one of the most popular of all time, if not the most popular, depending on who you ask. But it's been rebooted like three times. Mm-hmm. We had obviously the first strain of six movies from Halloween 1 through 6, and then they rebooted. They skipped the next one, H2O, skipped everything after 3. Well, 3 doesn't count anyway, at least in the canon. So H2O skipped 4, 5, and 6, and then they did that in Resurrection. Then Rob Zombie's 2, which are just separate. And when this one, when we first heard about it, it was supposed to continue Halloween 2, the original Halloween 2. Then we find out that it's actually rebooting after Halloween 1. Mm-hmm. And I was a little kind of annoyed because the original Halloween 2 is a great movie. And John Carpenter was part of it. He didn't direct it. He wrote and produced it, and Rick Rosenthal directed it. But I didn't ever thought there was a problem with that. So I don't know why he was rebooting that. So I don't want to say went in miffed, but I was like, I hope this is good because you could have just done it after Halloween 2 and everything would have been fine. But to take out Halloween 2 out of the canon, I don't know, might be a risk because Halloween 2 is a good movie and now you're going to redo it and it may suck. Having said that, I liked it a lot. They didn't – like usually when you talk about Jason or Freddy are dead. They're you know, one is a walking zombie in essence and the other is pretty much like a corporal being, I guess, from the other side that can be human or whatever. Whereas Michael Myers was an actual person. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they actually treated him like an old man. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, Michael Myers was 60 or 63. Because technically, apparently, based on the credits, in the first Halloween, Michael was 23 when he broke out of Smith's Grove in the first movie in 78. So if you do the math, if Carpenter's going to keep any kind of canon, technically Michael was 63 in this movie. And they did show him with gray hair, so obviously they did do that. They didn't like just pretend that, you know, that it was right after. They did do 40 years and kind of rebooted Jamie Lee mm-hmm. because in H2O she was a success. Well, first of all, in the first canon, they killed her off. When they rebooted H2O, she was living in another state under an assumed name. Now here, they get rid of Halloween 2. She's so freaked out after what happened in the first one that she, like, you know, lives out in the woods like a fucking nut job with, you know, a billion weapons and, you know, alarms and, you know, lasers or whatever, like weird kind of stuff around her house. And, you know, estranged from her family. So I thought that was I didn't like that, but it did kind of work itself around eventually when we get to the end. But I thought the story was good. I thought the music was good. None of the acting bothered me. I thought everybody in it was very good. And they do leave the door open for another third one. Because even though the house burned, is it the end? Did John Carpenter want to do this one to finally shut the door on the franchise and leave it as is, you know, and, you know, leave it as is and move on? If that's the case, I'm fine. If the door's shut and we have what we have, that's tremendous. Not to, you know, move along in the topic. I want to hear Jenny's thoughts. But if they decide to do another one, I don't know. I think Carpenter might go too far. I think I'm fine if they just – we assume he's gone. Or if we just leave it open-ended forever, that's fine with me too. horrors like that. So, so that's just my opinion. I liked it. I was skeptical going in. I'm sure Jenny was too. I know a lot of people were. But I'm good with it now. And if we never see another one, that's okay with me.
I'm going to agree with that part of it. I was pretty mixed on it overall. I think I did probably have a little bit higher expectations than what I got, but there were some things that I wasn't expecting, like sort of the family drama of it with Jamie Lee and her daughter and her granddaughter, which I actually did enjoy quite a bit. I thought it added a layer that I wasn't expecting. There were some great kills, which is what I was really hoping for. A couple of twists, which I thought were well done. Some of the, like towards the end, when they're kind of making their last stand at the house, a lot of that was shaky for me because it felt clunky in spots. But I thought Jamie Lee was very good. Acting wise, she was very believable as, you know, someone who is very traumatized by the things that have happened to her and all of the precautions that she takes, is believable and, sort of relatable, considering what she's been through. And, I think the trauma to her daughter growing up is also pretty believable. So I was really happy that they added that layer to it. I thought the granddaughter was pretty good for a teenage / you know, 20s, whatever they do now, actress. And it added that sort of young element that you kind of want in a horror film. I would say it was not as scary as I would have liked. I was not truly scared at any point, I don't think. But there was a lot of catharsis at the ending, which I did appreciate. And then, like you said, sort of opened that door for something further. Whether I want that or not, I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe you could do something with the granddaughter. But, I mean, do you want to? I don't know. But overall, it was just okay, really, for me.
All right. Maybe I'll check it out someday. I think I've only seen, like, Halloween a little bit.
I have every single one of them if you ever want
to. If I ever have, a weekend to kill.
Exactly. Well, you don't have to watch them all at once. But, I mean, yeah. That's...
Well, honestly, all you have to really watch is the first one, maybe the second one, and then you could watch this. Which is kind of the beauty of it, too, because you don't have to deal with any of the other bullshit that happens, even good and bad bullshit. But you can still sort of pick this up kind of wherever.
Right. No, she's right. You could. Okay. You literally can watch three different strains of the canon. You could watch 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. You could watch 1, H2O, and Resurrection. Or you could watch 1 and the new one. So you literally could go three different paths and be fine. And then watch Season of the Witch, like, on its own another day by itself.
Which is interesting and also confusing.
It is. Oh, that's another... God. That's another podcast from the day. I don't know if I asked Jason Sherman, we might be on for about 11 hours. So you know, maybe if I want to appease him, and we can, and I could somehow edit for him. Who knows? But anyway, yeah, no, there is. It is funny though that you can literally go on three strains, three different paths of the Halloween franchise, and be perfectly fine. It's pretty funny. But anyway,
wow.
We digress. But anyway, the if you want to watch it, I mean, I don't know if it's ever going to be on Shudder. Probably not. It's too high profile to be on Shudder's where all the low rent crap.
Hey, not always.
But the low budget. I have Shudder. I love Shudder. But I mean, I never see a high profile horror movie on Shudder. I usually see, like, you know, Slugs or whatever that movie was, where the radioactive slugs went into the system and ate everybody or whatever. I will say this though: there is some good stuff, like the remake of Nosferatu, that's very good. I saw that on Shudder. That's tremendous. And some other indie stuff. But I'm just saying that something as high profile as this probably wouldn't be on there.
What about what about Sorority Girls and the Slimeball-O-Rama? Ever hear of that one?
Yes, that's on there.
Oh, my God. That kind of freaked me out. I think I saw on USA Up All Night, and that little whatever thing was, and when he would talk and he'd just take over people's minds and shit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think Happy Birthday to Me was on there, the original. the crazy kids. That was on there. I think the remake of My Bloody Valentine. Anyway, we're digressing.
Yeah.
Joe Bob's new weekly show is going to start like next week. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, so glad that he's back doing regular stuff. That's going to be fantastic. I don't know if he'll have Halloween, but maybe he will. It is Joe Bob, by the way.
Oh, my daughter's starting to get into horror movies, so maybe if she wants to watch some of this stuff, maybe I'll it's not fun being a scaredy cat in front of your 17-year-old daughter.
There's certain horror movies that you can enjoy. I would have no problem with her watching any of the first of the franchises. The first Halloween, the first Friday, or the first Nightmare. Not bloody. Well, when what's her name dies in Nightmare with the blonde. Remember she gets – you've seen the first Nightmare, Andy?
I think I've seen most of the Nightmare on Elm Street.
What's her name, Jenny? The blonde that gets chucked around the room?
Oh, fuck if I know.
Her, that character. That's pretty bloody.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
If you're nervous about like the gore and stuff, I wouldn't have her see like Hostel or anything.
I'm never going to watch any Saw movies or anything like that because that torture porn does not – appeal to me, but there are other things I get sucked into, like was like 13 Ghosts. I got sucked into. I think I've watched The Wrong Turn. There are some movies that I'll watch. It's just
Haunted House horror movies are great.
It's just
I would definitely have her see the first the original Exorcist, mm-hmm. and the original Omen. Those are both really awesome.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway,
no, it's more about me just not wanting to look like a big pussy in front of my torch.
You're like, hey, let's watch Willy Wonka.
No, I'm actually fine with that stuff. It's like, when you're, you guys don't have teenage daughters, but, we're like sitting there watching like Deadpool and that whole Calendar Girl scene starts. I'm like, oh God, we're fast forwarding. Don't worry. It's them falling in love. It's fine.
You're such a better parent than I am.
No, I'm letting my son watch this stuff now. So it's like, shh, don't tell your mom kind of thing. But no.
Anyway.
But so there, the next few movies, none of us have seen, but, we're going to quickly, just mention them so we can see if, like, that's something maybe you want to visit. Like, mid-90s came out. This was Jonah Hill's directing and writing debut.
Oh, yeah.
So
I do love me some Jonah Hill, so, yeah, I could see me watching that.
So, yeah, the plot summary is the movie follows Stevie, a 13-year-old in the 1990s era Los Angeles. He spends his summer navigating between his troubled home life and a group of new friends that he meets at a Motor Avenue skate shop. Well, I mean, that's one of those, maybe if it's the HBO Saturday movie, give it a shot. And then we have Can You Ever Forgive Me? Now, this had a couple of Oscar noms for acting for Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant. Both of them, unfortunately, lost. But the plot is that when Lee Israel falls out of step with current taste, she turns her art form into deception. So basically, this woman is like a biographer, a celebrity biographer, and she starts, kind of gets behind the times and starts making shit up, basically, in her books,
right.
Kind of thing. So that's what it sounds like. Then there was another Robin Hood that came out with Jamie Foxx, amongst other people. Honestly, unless it's like, I'm not watching that unless it's like on TNT.
Was that a Guy Ritchie movie?
It looked like a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, it did look like it.
It very well could have been.
Is he still married to Madonna?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to look that up at some point. And then the Nutcracker in the Four Realms, which I asked my kids briefly. I'm like, you guys want to see it? Nope. it's probably one of those things that look pretty on screen, but, between this and that other movie with Oprah – that came out earlier last year.
A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, though Disney, Disney, which usually hits it out of the park. Those were two big losses for them. But, that's again, if it's on and there's nothing else on, maybe we'll take a look at it. So finally, we're on to a movie that we've all seen. And that came out November 2nd. That is Bohemian Rhapsody. So, Jenny, let's tell us about your thoughts on Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay, I have complex feelings about Bohemian Rhapsody because I adore Rami, however you say it.
Mm-hmm. Rami.
Rami. And Rami. So I adore him. I think he's a tremendous actor. I thought he was tremendous in this movie. But I wanted a real gritty version of this. and this was not what I was expecting. I thought the concert sequences were really, really good. Everything sounded really, really good. All of the acting was really, really good, give or take a Mike Myers or two. But,
I thought he was fine.
I mean, it was a little bit like, holy shit. And I like meta stuff, but okay. But overall, I just felt like the timeline was all fucked up. I know things didn't happen the way that they were portrayed to happen. And I just felt like that Rami's performance was so fucking good, and he didn't get the chance to really just like to do what I know he could do and to get into the gritty of Freddie Mercury, and like there were glimpses of it, but it wasn't ever fully realized for me. And then as much as like they build up to the Live Aid sequence at the end, and that was good. Like musically, I don't know. I was just left sort of disappointed by the end of it. As much as I wanted to just like love it, I don't know. It was missing something for me, some sort of realness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you thought it was too, I guess.
It was whitewashed.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I could see where you could think that. Scott, what about you? What's your thoughts on Bohemian Rhapsody?
I don't usually, I mean, I respect Jenny's opinions on a lot of things, from horror movies to whiskey brands.
But, to MSG house shows.
To MSG house shows, yeah. But I have to completely disagree with her on this. I think it was a fantastic snapshot of the band and of Freddie. I don't think there was a ton missing from Freddie. I think that we saw the frustration, because we remember the one thing that I had going into this was that Queen was behind it. Brian May, mm-hmm. you know.
Roger Taylor
and John. Why am I brain farting? The bass player. Crap. Why am I brain farting?
The kid from Jurassic Park.
he was great too. He was really.
Yeah. And so I knew that it wasn't going to be a shit show. It wasn't going to be like The Doors, which most of I'm always 50-50 on Oliver Stone and Ray Manzarek, who's also now since passed away, had said that a decent amount of that movie was horse shit. But I knew that we were not going to get some fly-by-night piece of junk. And I think we got a lot of – besides the soundtrack, which is awesome, the fact that I love Queen and the live performance stuff, we saw a lot of Freddie's frustrations. And a lot of people think, oh, the only frustration was because he was gay. That wasn't the only thing. Here was a guy who because he didn't really think – he really didn't know about really how gay he was until like the early 80s. So it really was more about, you know, his father not giving – you know, his not having a solid job and not being, you know, very loyal to the Zoroastrian faith and that kind of thing. And his father like thinking singing is for, you know, nitwits who have no other skills. And so it was good to see that part of how he was kind of a misfit and how Queen was almost like the misfit band. It was, I definitely saw a lot of great storytelling in the movie. The Live Aid performance, which many have considered one of the greatest rock live performances of all time. And it's only 20 something minutes. And we saw in the movie, like 7 minutes of it. One of the hooks of the Blu-ray, I think it's on the DVD too, is the full – they did the full 23-minute performance of Live Aid. They just only used like two songs in the movie. But I guess the full concert – and literally Rami Malek spent hours and hours studying Freddie in that concert. And it's literally move for move, which is very impressive.
It super is, but then it's all the CGI around it that takes it away from me.
Well, yeah, no, I understand. I understand that too. I mean, they really couldn't avoid it, but I understand what you mean. I understand what you're saying by that. I know a lot of people thought it was incomplete. because it's like, well, why didn't we see all the way to the end of Freddy's life? Mm-hmm. And honestly, who wanted to see that? That was the pinnacle of his of Queen, was that comeback. Now, they obviously fudged with history because Freddie didn't find out he had AIDS until 2 years after this concert.
Right.
They fudged the timeline to make the drama more, you know, a typical cinema shit.
Yes, that bothered me.
Yeah, it bothered me a little bit too. Like, I don't think we needed – I think them just getting back together after all of the professional drama would have been enough. But to push up the fact that Freddie tells them all I'm dying,
yeah,
I thought that was unnecessary. I'll give you that one, Jenny. I'll give you that one. I don't think that was needed. Now, having said that, I'm glad that we stopped there because – and Brian May said this in an interview. Oh, why didn't you guys continue on all the way till like Freddie's death or whatever? Because – Freddie didn't want to be in the public eye in real life when he was ill. Why would we have Remy Malek dress up like a frail, pasty guy when the real Freddie didn't want to be this way? Why would we do it in the movie? So that was Brian May's opinion. And I agree. Somebody said, why don't they do – some idiot – I forgot what website it was. Somebody said the movie company approached Brian May about a sequel. from you don't do biopic sequels. What the fuck is wrong with you?
That's, I mean, it would just be like a whole movie of him dying, which honestly, for me, I could watch that. But
it's like, it sounds like making a sequel to Titanic. I mean, for fuck's sake,
that is truly the sickest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
I'm just saying, that's what I wanted out of this movie.
No, I didn't want to see Freddie dying. Nobody did. If the real Freddie didn't want to be in public to die, then the fake one I don't think would have wanted to.
It's just fucking real. That's what I wanted to see.
Well, real, true. But I think, again, I think Brian May's point was Freddie would not have been happy with us plastering Remy Malek looking like the Crypt Keeper all over the movie. That's just his opinion. Now, if they did it on their own and it was unauthorized, and there have been Queen movies, Jenny, I think I'll point out to you one movie. It was like a documentary type slash biopic that came out, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I forgot who played Freddie, but that one they did all the way to the end, like the actor, I forgot his name.
I feel like I've seen that.
They made him pale and mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But other than that, I was floored, and I'm looking forward to Rocket Man. I don't know, we'll talk about that a few months mm-hmm. down the line. Now Elton is a different I don't say character, a different personality than Freddie. But Elton has had just as amazing a life as Freddie did. Obviously Elton's still alive. But having said that, I thought this was, if they were going to do a definitive movie on the artist and on the band, this was it. And I was perfectly fine with that. And you know, what's funny, what's serendipitous is that Remy Malek is actually dating in real life. I don't remember her name, but the actress that played Mary Austin, they're going out in real life. So I think that's actually pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But that's my only difference. I respectfully disagree with Jenny on that. I don't think we needed to see him waste away to nothing. I don't think that was Brian May's point. I think they wanted to talk about the ups and downs of the band and what happened and kind of the triumph of – I'm kind of surprised, to be honest, that Brian May approved them changing the timeline and having them say that Freddie – got AIDS. I was kind of surprised that they approved that because I didn't think they would. But in any event, I liked the movie, so I had no problem with it. But I could see how others would think it was that it was, you know, incomplete. But it was pretty close to, I guess, what his life was, and just as much the band. And there were some cool moments. The scene, which seemed fake but was actually real, where Freddie starts arguing with Brian in the studio, and John Deacon. Thank you, Deacon. Mm-hmm. John Deacon starts playing the bass riff to Another One Bites the Dust. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That actually happened, and I think that's kind of cool. It's not like, I don't know if you saw The Doors, but the scene where Jim Morrison's in the studio and he sees Light My Fire in the mm-hmm. in the Ford commercial, and he throws a TV across. Ray Manzarek said that never happened. Jim didn't care about that. He says Jim didn't care about that kind of stuff. It didn't faze him. He was shit-faced half the time anyway, so he probably never watched any TV. So Ray Manzarek had always said that Oliver Stone kind of embellished that to make Jim out to be a fucking doped up nut job. So any event, I thought it was a great movie. I can understand some people being frustrated. I wasn't. I think it was a good snapshot for the band's existence. And I'm looking forward to Rocket Man because I think it'll be just as good. I think we're going to see, on a side note, and I know we'll move on, I think we're going to see – I think it's now the era of the biopic. And I think you're going to see a lot of artists start to do that now. I would not be surprised if we see a biopic on Skynyrd and a McPlane crash. Yeah. I think that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if we saw – I know I'm using all these Southern bands. I'm not buttering Kenny up.
We have the Motley Crue movie,
sure,
right?
You're not.
Isn't, I mean, I think – I could see an Allman Brothers movie. Mm-hmm. Cause, I mean, look at the tragedy. They were at their peak, and then their best guitar player died. The band was only, what, like 3 years old or 4 years old when Dwayne died? So – and I'm not just saying musicians, I'm saying anybody.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to start seeing an era of biopics because Bohemian Rhapsody did so well, and I think Rocket Man's going to do very well. That's music, but I could see sports figures, other actors, anything like that. More politicians, you know, just public figures, anything like that. I think we're going to see an era of biopics in the next 4 or 5 years.
Just give me a Vince McMahon biopic and I'm good.
We can have an actor play Vince, and then JR can voice him. And then Place Me Nation can be all the actors.
We'll just make a movie. How about that?
I mean, we already have Jim Ross.
But Miranda would have to wear a ton of makeup to be Stu Hart, though. I don't know.
She wouldn't care. She would love it.
I think that'd be great. So
I could always be former director of talent relations of WWE, John Laurinaitis.
The Dub-Dub Universe.
The WWE Universe. Why, that is such a clunky thing to have to say over and over, by the way.
I know, he sucked at it. So. Anyway.
Go to hell.
Josh Fisher as Linda.
Yes, exactly. Yes. You as Stephanie.
Yeah.
We have a Shane. I don't remember. Anyway. Anyway, I know we'll move on, but yeah, I think it's going to be the era of biopics over the next few years. Because I think people saw Bohemian Rhapsody do well. I think Rocket Man's going to do well. And anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. I gave my thoughts on the Oscar pod. I thought it was really – one thing I thought the casting – I mean, the guy who played Brian May.
Yeah.
And also the guy who played Roger Waters. They were incredible. I didn't mind the Mike Myers thing. I think it was like a riff on Bohemian Rhapsody being used in Wayne's World. I was fine with that. It was like – you know, it didn't stay for very long. You know what I mean? It was like – it was kind of a – one shot thing, and he was kind of out of there, so it didn't overtake the movie, I guess, or anything like that. It was kind of like, oh, okay, that's a goofy little thing they put in there. It's kind of fun. But yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody, that's a movie I'm going to revisit when I can. So after that, we had Dr. Seuss's The Grinch, the animated movie voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch. My kids are a little older now, so they're very... they kind of pick and choose now the animated movies. It wasn't like, you know, when they're like much younger, it's like, you gotta go see every fucking animated movie. And this one, they were like, no, we'll pass on this one. We're good, Dad. So, did your son, Jenny, have any interest in seeing The Grinch?
Sort of vaguely. I pushed it a little bit because of Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm a huge fan of his, but he was not super into it. So I didn't really push it. Mm-hmm. Meh.
Yeah. It was one of those things, like, I'm cool watching, like, the half
the
hour.
Original. Yeah.
With, you know, Boris Karloff and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then after that, we had the second out of five movies coming out in the Fantastic Beast series, The Crimes of Grindelwald. I enjoyed it. There were, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you kind of know things, you know, in the universe that it's set in, and it... Sometimes it kind of takes you out a little bit. You're like, you know, you wonder, like, okay, Dumbledore looks like Jude Law now. And then, like, if you look at the timeline, only about 20, 30 years from now, he looks like Richard Harris. So it's like he aged quite a bit. And what the hell happened at Hogwarts that he
Dumbledore went through some shit, okay, Andy?
I know. But, you know, I thought it was good. I mean, Johnny Depp was fine. He wasn't one of those things where he takes over a movie where, you know, that's one thing that annoys me about Johnny Depp is I love Captain Jack Sparrow as a character. But then when you started, like, you know, he was in that Alice in Wonderland movie where he was the Mad Hatter, or that piece of shit Lone Ranger movie where he was Tonto. And those two characters became like the main characters. And that's not the way those stories should have been. Mm-hmm. So he was fine in here as the bad guy. You know, I like that they're setting each movie primarily in a different location. Like, the first one was New York, this one was Paris. I don't know where they're going next. But, and I also, you know, there's a couple of twists at the end of this movie, which, you know, most Harry Potter movies,
do or books do have some sort of a twist that happens where you kind of think one thing is going to happen or something is revealed to kind of throw any theories you had in your head kind of out the water. But, you know, I'm enjoying the series. I think they could have used a little bit more Beast in this movie. You know, mm-hmm. I think there was a lack of them in it. But it was a fun ride. Jenny, you saw it also. What did you think?
I did, and I'm a sucker for Harry Potter movies, so I'm predisposed to liking this already. But I thought Eddie Redmayne was very good. Mm-hmm. Again, I would agree there could have been some more Beasts in it. It was very political in a lot of ways. But I enjoyed all of the performances. I think that Ezra Miller is really, really, really good in his role. Mm-hmm. And he had sort of a twist at the end, which I was not expecting.
Oh, yeah.
That I loved. I thought it looked really good. All the sequences were just super, just that Harry Potter style that are just super well done. Another great installment to the series. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Another point I want to make is I'm a big Dan Fogler fan. Now, he plays Jacob.
Yeah, he's good.
And that guy is a great – he's like one of the new character actors.
Yeah.
You know, that you find anytime he shows up, you know he's going to give it his all, whether he's the cool uncle on the Goldbergs or I don't know if you guys saw – what the hell is the movie? Shit. Now I'm trying to remember. It's the movie where they break into Lucasfilm in the movie.
Fanboys.
Yes.
I fucking love that movie.
Yes.
I want to see it. I saw the Blu-ray the other day. It was a little expensive, but I definitely want to get it.
Get it for sure.
Oh, Scott. Yeah. Scott, you're going to really, really enjoy it. Trust me.
Yeah, no, because we all are one. We all are. Yeah. I actually did not. I am going to definitely see it. I have the Hogwarts collection, the box set on my shelf here. I've seen three of the eight Harrys. I read all the books.
Okay.
Yeah, I've only seen three of them, but I read all the books. And I have the Fantastic Beasts and get them, tame them,
train
them. I have it on my shelf. I didn't even open it yet, but it's there. Anything like that, I blind
where
buy.
Where to find them?
Find them. Yeah, yeah. I blind buy that stuff because I love any of that kind of fantasy.
But you super fiction. Need to watch all of those like right now as soon as we get off this.
Yeah, no, there's like 31 discs in this fucking box.
Yeah, watch all of those tonight.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of extras and everything, and I got Fantastic Beasts. So when Grindelwald comes out, you know, when it comes out on Blu-ray at a decent price, I'll probably bag it. But I purposely didn't see it because I didn't see the first one. So I avoided it only because it would have made no sense to see it without seeing the first one. So I'll definitely get it.
Yeah. All right. So that's a recommend from all of us here. And then to close out the first segment here, a couple of movies that, you know, Instant Family came out. I had no interest in seeing this movie. It was from Mark Wahlberg.
The Mark Wahlberg one?
Mark Wahlberg.
The kids.
Yeah, Rose Byrne. Kind of like we kind of see that kind of stuff, you know, every so often from different actors. And then Widows, which I actually did see. It's set in contemporary Chicago amid a time of turmoil. Four women with nothing in common except the debt left behind by their dead husband's criminal activities take faith into their own hands and conspire to forge a future on their own terms. Now, this was starring Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, and Liam Neeson, amongst others. I did see it. I did have a friend of mine who I borrowed it from who is in a guild, and I actually fell asleep halfway through it. But my girlfriend did enjoy it. It's kind of like a gritty version of Ocean's 11, Ocean's 8, I mean, where basically these women, their husbands do a job, basically, and they have to, I guess, under threat, they have to kind of pull it off to kind of pay their debt off, I guess. And yeah. There's some twists and turns as it goes. I mean, it's something, you know, when it gets on streaming or whatever, I would recommend it. So, talking about Widows is going to bring us to the end of the first segment, at the end of the A block. So, yes, we're only looking back right now because we're going to be looking forward coming up in the future on a future show. So stick around. We're going to look back a little bit more. We're going to pick up around Thanksgiving of last year.
with Jennifer Smith and Scott Criscolla on the Andy Afton. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place Two Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceTwoNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Two Nations wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop Feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com. For all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You got the touch. You got the power.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to Looking Forward, Looking Back number 3. We're actually just looking back tonight, along with Jennifer Smith and Scott Criscolla. I am Andy Addison. Before we move on to some more movies, we're going to do our live feed. I'll tell you what's going on here at Place to Be Nation. Lots going on all of our feeds, on the website, on the pro boards. So let's get into it. So here on the Pop Feed, it's been a busy week with a little something for everyone. And the newest hard-traveling fanboys, Greg and Nick, delivered a spoiler-filled review of Captain Marvel. Also, myself, Mr. Criscolo, and Jenny's geek and sassy co-host, Miranda Berthold, we got together to do a Captain Marvel review. We were more of the, we didn't go deep dive into the comics lore, but it was a lot of fun. You know, we all enjoyed the movie. It was a great origin story to join the MCU. So, plenty of Captain Marvel content here on the PlayStation Pop Feed this month. Probably have a lot of Avengers stuff coming up, and also Shazam, when those movies release soon. On Jason Sherman's first episode of PTBN E-Ticket Attraction, I was one of his guests along with Mr. Neil Trauma, and we dove right into an intense look at Disney's Magic Kingdom, as well as Epcot's Festival of the Arts. It was a lot of fun, and Jason did a great job on his first show, so give it a listen. And also, don't forget, go by the Geek and Sassy Facebook page. We can grab a complete ballot for the second annual Sassy Awards. Make your voices heard. Now, I know the voting is closing soon, Jenny, right? Is that correct?
It is. We're recording in just a few days. So
all right. So
get
so
your ballots in.
Get them in. Over on the PTBN Wrestling feed, we had a lot of number of shows go up. The continued... the deep dive into the vault with classic With a Big Boy Play episode. This time, Chad and Parr finished their look at Great American Bash 1987. And JT and Chad return with a new Wrestling Warzone podcast as they break down the Raw and Nitro from 12-18-95, featuring more Santa Claus. On this week's main event, Scott and Steve Willey and Nate Millen broke down Fastlane and started to lay out their thoughts on WrestleMania. They also delivered the newest classic TNA pay-per-view recap. And in episode 4 of You Don't Know Billy Jack, Drew introduces Jordan to the classic Henning Bockwinkel time limit draw. So don't forget to check out PlaceToBeNation.com as things are getting back up and running there and March rolls on. Content will be picking back up in the days and weeks to come. And finally, be sure to give the PTBN Greatest Candy Tournament Facebook page a like so that you can participate in the daily polls as we determine which candy is indeed the greatest of all time. The polls go out also via Twitter. And things kicked off March 10th with a champion being crowned on Easter Sunday.
We are getting through the first round. We're almost a little more than halfway through. We are in the Sweet Treats region, which is a mixed bag of candies, so to speak. Jenny, what candy are you pulling for in this tournament?
Well, number one is Snickers, small-time favorite, and then you got to go Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yes. Everybody's saying that they're basically the Duke of North Carolina of the tournament. Yeah, you never know, though. You could see, like, a Twix or Kit Kat or maybe M&M's pulled out. Yeah. And then people are kind of discounting, like, you know, Starburst and Skittles, because those have yet to make their appearance in the tournament.
But, that's true.
Mm-hmm. But four polls will go up a day, and you have 2 days to vote in each. Scott.
I have to say that I think, based on kind of what we've seen so far, see, if we're equating candies to college basketball teams, yes, Reese's and Snickers is like Duke and Carolina. Milky Way is like Kansas. But the original Hershey bars, like UCLA, you know, that was the old guard. That would have won the tournament in like the, you know, 40 years ago. But now seems to be forgotten, but may not be as much forgotten. So
yes, we all know you're old.
Like, you've never had a fucking Hershey bar. Seriously.
I like Hershey almond. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, it's the same fucking thing. I'm sure there was a Hershey almond bar back when I was younger in 2010.
You're younger in 2010.
But what I was saying was in the grand scheme of things, you're talking about Starburst and those. I think in the end, chocolate's going to win out.
Yeah.
Regardless of who wins a tournament, I think chocolate's something chocolate related is going to win.
Well, I mean, the chocolate candy bars and the chocolate candies have to – the winner of those regions have to face each other. So only one – it's not going to be two chocolate candies in the end.
No, I don't. But I think whoever – then I think if I'm looking ahead, I think the winner of that half of the bracket will win the tournament.
Yeah. That's a –
because, I mean, an M&M's Reese's national semifinal is pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to see where some of these the chips may fall, so to speak, in this tournament. Also, one thing I forgot to mention. Scott, you and I got together with Dr. G and Mr. Mm-hmm. D'Amato, and we released the latest episode of – The Year in Pop. We covered 1974. So check that out.
Did we talk about candy in that episode?
We may have.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was only Hershey and Zagnuts. That was the only candy way back in the day.
And Raisinets.
No, I don't even think there were Raisinets. Sugar Daddies. That's what it was.
Would you like a butterscotch? Right. A nice fucking candy?
Those little fucking strawberry ones that are hidden in aprons with lint.
Well, I may have a candy in my purse. Hold on.
In my purse. Wait, I got to finish watching my stories.
I think we did that on the show. Well, yeah, check out the Urine Pop, or as Jenny likes to call it. What do you like to call it, Jenny?
It's Old Cast.
The Old Cast, which we're okay with that.
Oh, God.
We're fine.
The Old Cast for only right now.
Yeah.
And it really is. So anyway, yes.
Anyway, so yeah, check out everything that's going on between our two feeds, placebination.com, as well as the Pro Boards over at bigelow34.proboards.com. Lots of fun stuff going on, so check it out. So let's get back to the movie talk, which is why we're all here. And we're going to go back to November around Thanksgiving with Ralph Breaks the Internet. Now, I'm the only one on the panel that saw that movie. And it was I enjoyed it. I loved the first Wreck-It Ralph. I thought it was the video game equivalent of Roger Rabbit, I would say. I mean, you never thought you would see characters together that ended up on screen. And, you know, there was a bit of a letdown in the sequel. There was a lot of play on internet jokes and the such, and there was some good differences in the, you know, the scenes, you know, the different... Like in the first one where you had, you know, a character from that the shooting game, and then you had Wreck-It Ralph, and then you had Vanellope. In this one, there was like a Grand Theft Auto type game, and then there was the a lot of puns based on, you know, internet stuff and eBay. And you know, it was a good – I would recommend it. Jenny, that was another one that your son did or did not want to see?
No, he passed on that one as well.
Yeah, that's something you should. I mean, I assume everybody is going to get Disney Plus, and that will be on there. So I would recommend that. Also, coming out at the same time was Green Book, which went on to win the Best Picture Oscar, as well as a Best Actor in a Supporting Role for Mahershala Ali. I would definitely recommend this, Scott. You'll love this movie. You know, right up your Italian roots right there.
That's right, yeah. And it's a period piece from the 60s or 70s, which I always enjoy. So
yeah.
Plus Ali is awesome. I'm just going to call him Ali because I don't want to blow his first name.
Yeah.
He was awesome in House of Cards. He was awesome on
Luke Cage.
He was awesome.
Detective season 3 that I'm watching right now.
Yep.
So good.
And apparently he was really good in Alita. So that guy's going to be a stud in down the line.
And Moonlight, which he won. Yeah, he's only won. He's already won 2 Oscars already too. It's pretty amazing.
I know. I'm not. There's no spoilers because the season 1 of that show is so long ago. But his character of Cottonmouth just was not treated well in that show at all. He could have gotten a much more mileage out of that character.
Than
it did.
They shortchanged him halfway through.
They absolutely shortchanged it. So. No, he's tremendous. I'll definitely watch that.
Yeah, he's one of those actors what no matter what he's in, you know he's gonna bring the goods. I mean, this was kind of against type, I guess, so to speak. Not gonna spoil his character at all, but Viggo Morrison was really good in it. As well as Linda Cardellini played his wife.
Viggo. Sounds like a restaurant in the Bronx. Hey, I'm going to get some veal at Vigo's.
Hey, Joe Bag of Donuts, Jimmy the Woman, Nicky Potato Salad. Come on. We're going to go to Vigo's. Come on. You know what I mean?
There was a guy that I used to call Bag of Donuts, just to let you know.
A little Zupa Depeche? Hey, yo. Hey, you're talking to a kid from Yonkers, okay? So, half my fraternity.
He's like, you guys in this made-up food.
Half my fraternity's from the Bronx, so.
Vigo, he was excellent. He was excellent.
And
from what I've heard.
Yeah, and a shout out to you guys hopefully will hear more of Craig DeFrancia, Iron Prep, class of 90, representing. He shows up in a scene in Green Book in the Savannah, Georgia when Vigo runs into him, speaks all Italian. So keep an eye out on that guy. We're friends. So well, it's good to see a guy from the old school do good. So
nice humble brag there, Andy.
What was that?
That was a nice humble brag.
Oh, sorry.
Really. Yeah, I'm friends with that guy.
Because no one else does.
Yeah. Hey, no,
most Iona people brag about themselves because nobody else does.
Well, you talk about Iona cause. This is Iona prep. Okay, we're a little different.
All right. So your high school annoyances instead of college.
Yeah, that's true.
No, same thing.
So, moving on to a movie, Scott, you're the only one that saw Creed 2. I have to confess, I still have to see the first Creed. They're on my list. But tell us about Creed 2 and your thoughts.
Creed 2 was excellent. It continues the story. They kind of brought back and from what I've heard, this is probably we're getting to the tail end of Rocky's involvement in the Creed series. I think Sly will still be involved behind the scenes, but I think his character will be done when they in Creed 3. For those that don't know, I'm not spoiling anything, but they bring back the storyline of Rocky and Ivan Drago. Drago is actually training his son, and it's about that. It's about it's a lot like Rocky 2 with Creed 2, where you know you have the big fight that ends at the end of Creed 1, that kind of ends, you know, in a split two per se. And then, he kind of sits on his laurels in this one. And his wife, his girlfriend is, they eventually get married, but his girlfriend's pregnant, just like Adrian was in Rocky 2. So it's got a lot of parallels with Rocky 2 and this one. But Michael B. Jordan's awesome. Sly, he's always great. It sucks for a fan of Carl Weathers as I am, because my favorite character in the entire history of the Rocky franchise is Apollo Creed. And the fact that he's dead, the character's dead, and he can't be in it unless they do flashbacks, kind of is a little empty. But having said that, I think it does add a lot, the fact that he's kind of rudderless, his son. But I liked it a lot. Was it better than the first one? I think they're about the same. I have to Maybe next time we do Urine Pop, Andy, we can ask Dr. G, because I'm curious if he liked it. But I never asked him if he thought it was better than the first one. But no, I'm definitely going to own it at some point. I think it just came out on Blu-ray a couple weeks ago. But it was good. I enjoyed it. I would definitely, I definitely watch both of them, Andy. They're definitely must sees.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list. Michael B. Jordan brings the goods all the time. He's another actor that never really phones it in, even if he's given shit material.
Yeah.
All right. Next was The Favorite, which I actually was the only one that saw. And that was in early 18th century England. A frail Queen Anne occupies the throne, and her close friend Lady Sarah governs the country in her stead. When a new servant, Abigail, arrives, her charm endears her to Sarah. I didn't really get this movie. I thought, it's a period piece, royal family. My girlfriend, who's huge into the royal family, kind of like you are, Jenny, she actually didn't really like it that much. It was kind of all over the place to me. I mean, I thought the performances were good. Olivia Colman, you know, was not a bad choice to win the Oscar for best, I believe she won for best supporting, I believe.
And Emma Stone's in that as well,
Emma
right?
Stone and Rachel Weisz.
Right. I love both of them.
Yeah. And I think they, Olivia Colman actually, I think, won for Best Actress or no. Because I know they were both, Rachel and Emma were donated, or were, sorry, were, Olivia Colman won for Best in, Best Leading Actress. No, they were both for supporting. And that's kind of what happens when two people are nominated in the same movie, kind of cancel each other's out sometimes.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, if you're into period, that period of time, I would recommend it. If not, you know, fine. and then another movie which didn't get any love from the Academy was Mary, Queen of Scots, with, it was about Mary Stuart's attempt to overthrow her cousin, Elizabeth I of Queen of England, and finds her condemned to years of imprisonment before facing execution. And that starred Saoirse Ronan, who's been an Oscar favorite lately, and the great Margot Robbie. And then we also had Leprechaun Returns. The Leprechaun returns once again when a group of girls unwillingly awaken him when they tear down a cabin so that they can build a new sorority house.
Okay, I need to watch this movie.
Yeah, you just nothing better than watching sorority girls get mutilated by a leprechaun, huh?
I fucking love leprechaun movies.
You do? Okay.
Is it the same? It's the same franchise, right, Jenny? As the original ones?
Yeah. Oh,
okay, yeah. Yeah, sorry, Andy, we're not talking blindly. Leprechaun is one of the most iconically ridiculous in a good way, horror movie franchises ever. So
I've seen bits and pieces of them.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's one of them had a very young, correct me if I'm wrong, Jenny, but one of them, I think it was the first one, had a very young and unknown Jennifer Aniston.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, that is great. So.
Well, a lot of them get their start in those horror movies, you know.
Yeah.
And Warwick Davis, Leprechaun, he's fucking awesome.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, he's great no matter what he's
in. He was a leprechaun and an Ewok. I mean, what a great career. You could just retire on that.
And Willow.
And a goblin in Harry Potter.
And everything.
Yeah,
and he was something else in the new episodes. The guy's a fucking legend for just being
awesome.
Yeah, he plays Professor Flitwick, and I think he plays Griphook as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Willow just came out with a third. I saw it the other day at Best Buy. I think it's like a 35th anniversary, or they just came out with like an anniversary like Blu-ray and DVD. It's funny that you mentioned Willow. But I think it's 35 years, right? 1980.
I grew up on that movie, and I love that movie. I haven't seen it in such a long time.
I think it came. Yeah, I think it's 35 years, right? 84, I think. Yeah, I think it did. Mm-hmm. I was about to say Tom Cruise, but that's Legend. I always get those two movies confused.
It's Val Kilmer. Yeah.
Val Kilmer. Yes.
Val Kilmer was Willow. Tom Cruise was Legend.
Yeah.
Speaking of, you know what they're remaking? I mean, they already did. I mean, on a side note, it's a very good fantasy movie from the 80s. Then they kind of remade it for TV on TNT, but now they're doing a big budget remake of it. Dune.
Yes.
Yeah. Kyle MacLachlan, Sting. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the woman is. Is it Jennifer Connelly? No.
It might have been.
Yeah, it might have been Jennifer Connelly.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah. So they're doing a big budget remake of Dune. I always put those movies like in the same group. Dune, Legend, Willow, Neverending Story, Krull, like all those mid-80s like fantasy movies all kind of in one clump. Maybe not Neverending Story, because that's
yeah.
Yeah.
Dark Crystal, Labyrinth. There's Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah.
And Bowie. I have that. That's a good movie.
Yeah, the Dune remake is being directed by Denis Villeneuve, who did the Blade Runner 2049.
Yes. Yes, he did.
So yeah, that should be interesting. I don't think I've ever seen actually Dune, the original.
But. Yeah, no, it's good. It's got Sting in it. It's good. Speaking of Blade Runner, Andy, I know you. As I'm getting to know you, I realize you're not the biggest sci-fi. If there's any non-Han Solo, Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford movie you must see, I don't know if Jenny will back me up on this because I don't know if she's ever seen it, but I would see the original Blade Runner.
No, I did. I did see it actually.
It's so fucking good.
I saw.
Actually, there's like 1,000 versions of it. Mm-hmm. If you ever see the one called The Final Cut, that's the best one. That's the one that Ridley Scott wanted to be in theaters, but Paramount or whatever fucking asshole movie house chopped the shit out of it.
No.
The theatrical version's good, but the final cut is the one. I think it came out like about 12 years ago. Is the best version.
Okay, whatever movie. What I think it was on cable, and I recorded it. So right before I saw 2049, which I thought was long and loud. I mean, literally, it was like another one of those Tuesday 9:30 at night movies, and it was like 2.5 fucking hours.
Yeah, you have to be in the right mood.
Yeah,
for those sort of movies.
Yeah, but any of those like dystopian, post-apocalyptic, you got to be in a certain frame of mind. If you're like in a happy-go-lucky mood, that's not a movie. It's not a movie you want to watch.
You definitely need to get high real quick before you watch.
Yeah, or you need to be fucking. Yeah, you need to be hammered already.
Yeah, it really works that way.
If you're tired. You know, after working all day and then you actually doze off in the movie.
it's like coming. It's like working like an 18-hour TV day, getting home at midnight and going, you know what? I feel like throwing in Ben-Hur. Like, you know, like you don't do that. You know, anything you have to change a disc for, you pass on something at 11 o'clock at night. But anyway.
Yeah. It's like watching Cleopatra. I think that took me 3 nights to get through. I was watching when I was working out on my bike for about an hour, hour and a half a night. Literally 3 fucking nights to finish that fucking movie.
I know, yeah. It's like watching Superman or any of those kind of movies. Or, but anyway.
It's a Mad World.
Mad World. That movie's great.
Yes.
All right. So anyway, we digress.
All right. Anyway, the next came out was Once Upon a Deadpool, which was the PG-13 recut with some bonus stuff coming in. I didn't want to give them my money again, so I said no to that movie.
If there was any Fred Savage in it, I probably missed out because I fucking love Fred Savage.
I do too.
I think he's just tremendous in everything that he does. And not, I don't particularly want to see a PG-13 Deadpool or what is P. Yeah. So, but at the same time, I could see that really kind of working just because I trust Ryan Reynolds with everything that he does, Deadpool. Mm-hmm. So it's probably pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, I pay for movies enough, so it's like I don't want to pay to see something again, you know. And Fred Savage as the mole, mole. That bloody mole, it's so huge, that bloody mole right there,
guacamole,
mole.
Andy, and for years, it's just is.
So the next movie that came out, Scott, you saw this one, The Mule, with Clint Eastwood. Why don't you talk about The Mule?
I did. The Mule. I'm a Clint guy anyway. I like Clint. The Mule. Actually, this was an accident. It was on one of the two. I always forget. One of the two Monday holidays. I don't remember if it was Martin Luther King or if it was President's Day. I don't remember which one. I think it was Martin Luther King's. It was fucking cold as balls. And we were going to see. It was Martin Luther King. Yes, because it was January. Because we were going to go see. A bunch of us were going to go see Aquaman. And it was sold out on that Monday because there was like 2 fucking birthday parties that day. So the Sono Theater. Andy knows what I'm talking about. The theater near us was there were 2 theaters and they were both full of like fucking 8-year-old kids. So we were like, ugh. So we looked up and we're like, what do you want to see? And I'm like, I don't really want to see anything else. I'm like, oh, why don't we see The Mule? Because we like all of us like Clint. So we're like, oh, why don't we see that and see if that's any good? For those that don't know, what it's about is quickly, he plays a horticulturist. He's a big flower guy, estranged from his is it the same thing, right? Horticulturist? Is that a flowers guy?
Yeah.
It's a flowers guy.
Flowers guy. He's big into growing flowers and that's, you know, he sells
botanist.
Them. Not really a botanist, more or less, but he grows flowers and he sells them. I'll just put it that way. He goes to like conventions and stuff. It's very, I'm not explaining it right, but anyway.
It's a very Clint Eastwood role is what you're saying.
It is,
he's
actually.
He's a florist, and he's, you know, and flowers and shit.
A florist. Well, he used to work with Janet Wood on Three's Company.
Doing the life of Police Academy with Bubba Smith. He's like, what do you have, flowers? You know, flowers and shit.
Anyway, so what happens is he apparently is a very good driver. Like, he doesn't pass a speed limit. He can go long distances. The cops don't pull him over. So he but he's struggling because he's not keeping up with technology. So he had to foreclose on his house or whatever. So a friend of his daughter says, listen, you know, if you don't mind, you know, playing rough and, you know, with the law, I got a job that suits your needs. So he goes to this garage and he starts working with a drug cartel. He drives a pickup truck and they put a duffel bag full of drugs in the back of the truck, and he drives long distances to a certain location. He leaves the car, takes a walk, comes back. The drugs are gone and there's cash in the glove compartment. So he starts doing that, and that's what the whole movie's about. So he's a mule. He drives from place to place with duffel bags of drugs. And it was very good. Who else was in it? Bradley Cooper, who is starting to slowly become I may have to watch A Star Is Born just for this, because Bradley Cooper is like slowly becoming one of my favorite actors. Not just for dopey stuff like The Hangover, but dopey good stuff. But I mean, like, funny ha-ha stuff. He was great in that. One of my favorite movies the last, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, I think it's come out in the last few years, that he was in was American Hustle. Mm-hmm. He was awesome in that.
Yeah, very good.
He was good in that movie. I was every podcast I do involving that mentions Bradley Cooper, I never remember the name of the fucking movie that he wears the Philadelphia Eagles jersey. I always forget the name of it, but. Apparently he was good in that.
With Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah. He's in everything with her, too. So anyway.
Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah, that's it. Apparently he was good in that, from what I've heard.
He was.
And
he was great. And he was great in The Mule. He wasn't in it a ton, but he was in it enough that he was, you know, Lawrence Fishburne was in it. Great cast. Really good cast. Andy Garcia was in it. I think that's it in terms of, like, well-known people. No, Diane Wiest was in it. She played his wife, ex-wife. So, I mean, if you're not a Clint fan, probably not your cup of tea, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It was a good movie for spur of the moment because we couldn't go see Aquaman. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, there's better Clint movies. Any of the Dirty Harrys are great. Million Dollar Baby's good. Gran Torino is tremendous.
Every Which Way You Can.
Any Which Way But Loose, and Any Which Way You Can. Both of them.
Yes, awesome movies. Right Turn
yeah,
Tide.
I could just rip off a bunch of Clint movies, but In the Line of Fire, that's also very good. So anyway, I don't know if I would. It would take me a while to go see it again. Again, I don't know if Clint is everyone's cup of tea or if that plot was, but. For a spur of the moment movie on a matinee, it was good. I enjoyed it. Hmm. It was solid.
Yeah, when you said he was a very good driver, all I had was Rain Man in my head.
Yeah, I know. I'm an excellent driver.
I didn't want to interrupt you.
I'm an excellent driver.
I know you'll chew me out tomorrow if I do.
No, not at all. Rain Man was the last movie I saw at a well-known theater in my hometown that ended up closing. That was the last movie I saw there was Rain Man. As a matter of fact, when I was a kid. I saw that. I saw E.T. and I saw Empire Strikes Back there. So anyway, you just mentioned Rain Man, so that just popped into my head. In fact, yeah. We've been mentioning Rain Man on the Please Be podcast because we're in early 89 in our timeline, as Jenny knows, because I mentioned Rain Man the other day on our last episode. Made a ton of money. So
yeah, it was a good movie, actually. And then I love how they kind of parodied it in Hangover, which you mentioned.
Yes, I know, right?
And then... Oh. So
anyway, the mule was solid. I don't know if it's everybody's cup of tea, but it was good.
Like, if it's the HBO Saturday night movie, that's, you know, I'd watch it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that kind of movie.
Yeah. All right. So next came out the what ended up winning the Oscar for Best Animated Feature, which was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Jenny, give us your thoughts on Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay, so this one my son was super into, and usually when we go to the movies, he makes 14 excuses to go to the bathroom every other 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah,
and
been there.
he went to the bathroom like maybe twice, so that's like a huge indicator for this movie because it was fucking tremendous. From the animation, the voice acting, the story, I think that all future superhero animated movies should look like this. This is the new gold standard. It was just beautifully done. My son fell in love with Spider Ham.
Yeah, he was funny.
He's a huge John Mulaney fan, so that was the main reason that he went to this movie. Jake Johnson is wonderful in it. Everyone is just, I think it was like a huge surprise. Like I figured it would probably be pretty good, but I didn't know it would be what it turned out to be. Mm-hmm. And just, it's just a whole nother level in superhero, like especially in animated storytelling. I just thought it was wonderful. I'm so happy it won the Oscar. So deserved.
Yeah, as being a huge Pixar mark, I was actually rooting for Spider-Verse also. I thought it was tremendous. My kids were super looking forward to it as well. My daughter, who will be 17, she's a huge nerd, a geek. You know, she loves her cartoons. Whoop. She's got a huge crush on Tom Holland, like you wouldn't believe.
Well, yeah, who doesn't?
You know, I make fun of him, like, do you practice writing Mrs. Jessica Holland sometimes? Oh, my God. And my son, you know, my son is 12, almost 12, so he's, you know, he's right in that wheelhouse. Yeah, the voice acting was great. Mahershala Ali was in this one as well. I like the blending of the animation.
Guy's a fucking beast, huh?
He is.
Damn it, he's so a beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I didn't see it, but that'll be a blind buy for me. Oh, yeah. I didn't get a chance to see it, but that'll be a blind buy. When it's on sale, I'll just bag it. It doesn't matter.
And you
guys have already sold me on it, so I'm just going to get it.
And this is where
the soundtrack too mm-hmm. is another just like this song Sunflower.
Oh yeah.
On repeat on my Spotify. I fucking love that song. The whole soundtrack.
Which
so
you
good.
May hear to close the show.
Well, yay! Right.
You can't handle surprises, can you, Atherton?
No, not really.
You're terrible. You're fired. Anyway.
Wait. Aren't I kind of like one of the bosses now?
Ooh!
Of the website, but not of the podcast.
Oh, whoa.
I've been Todd Weber a hell of a lot longer than you have. So.
Anyway. but I think, so speaking of Spider-Man in general and superheroes, with the whole rights shit and all that stuff, so Sony just needs to leave the live-action Spider-Man over with the MCU, with Marvel and Disney and all that, and let them handle him because they're doing a good job with that character, and they need to focus on the animated Spider-Verse movies because there's another one coming. You know, the movie has some surprises. They turned some things on their ear, you know, little bending, so to speak, if you will. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of fun, and I was just captivated. I was just... This movie kept my attention the entire time because I had no idea what the fuck was going to happen next.
It was really funny, and you introduced that whole multiverse mm-hmm. in such a great way with so many different quote unquote Spider-Men for everyone, and I just love it so much. I want like a separate animated like series for Spider-Ham. Like, as soon as the movie was over, I was like, I need to read all the Spider-Ham comics, and then the collected version doesn't come out till like July. So I haven't read any of that yet, but as soon as it comes out, I'm reading all the Spider-Ham I could read.
Oh, yeah. Spider-Ham stole the show.
For sure.
So to speak. Yeah, it was fun, and it had a heart, you know, a lot of good family stuff in there, and a lot of nods, a lot of Easter eggs. Like a shit ton of Easter eggs, you know.
Tell me he was actually a Spider-Man that carried around a ham.
No, he was a ham.
An actual ham?
He's a pig, yes.
Actually,
fucking seeing this fucking movie right now. Good. I'm leaving this podcast right now.
Actually, isn't he a spider that gets bitten by a radioactive pig? Is that what I got from it, or was I like, you know...
could be correct, because his whole universe is like... weird, like that's like Looney Tunish kind of.
Yeah, you see, and then you had Nick Cage as Noir Spider-Man.
Yes, oh my God,
it was like so brooding, and he was so Nick Cage. Good. And then you had the Jake Johnson as Peter Parker, you know, as kind of like a down on his luck kind of version of Peter Parker. But yeah, the kid who played Miles Morales did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was great. Him. I know, Scott, I know you don't have a PS4. Jenny, you guys have a PS4?
No, we don't.
Oh, that Spider-Man game.
Our Xbox house.
But that Spider-Man game, maybe one day it'll cross-platform. Who knows? But, I mean, I just finished the story mode, and it's tremendous. on that game. So I highly, and if you got a PS4 out there, play that fucking game. Trust me. It is so much fun. So Spider-Verse, Scott, you got to see it yesterday. Other than that.
Well, that's a blind buy. I'm just getting it. There's no doubt about that.
And then came out another, it looked like one of Peter Jackson's pet projects, Mortal Engines, which none of us saw, and I don't think I might not ever see, but in a post-apocalyptic world where cities ride on wheels and consume each other to survive, two people meet in London and try to stop a conspiracy. So, yeah, that was one of those big-budget sci-fi things that probably people just said, hey, let's just keep Peter Jackson happy. Let him make the fucking movie.
Yeah, I when I was at Comic-Con, when I was at New York Comic-Con in October, there was a huge fucking banner in one of the halls for this Mortal Engines. And I looked at it and said, wow, that kind of looks pretty cool. But then when I and again, like I said earlier in the show, I'm not one to go with other press. But when I heard I heard an overabundance of people say how fucking terrible it was. I don't say I avoided it, but I'm like, all right, I'll put it lower on my list. But I'm going to see other things first. And I just never got around to it. That might be another one of those Amazon Prime or Netflix, something I'll check out. And if I like it, cool. And maybe I'll buy the Blu-ray if the extras are good. But if not, then if I'm like, eh, then forget it. But I remember they had a fucking huge banner and they had like people selling stuff. And there was something that looked like one of the vehicles and things like that. So they were pumping when I went to Comic-Con in October, they were pumping the shit out of that movie.
It just makes me wonder what Peter Jackson, like what draws him to this. Like I believe that he's talented and he's a good storyteller, but I don't know, like what is it about this project that makes him want to do it?
It's funny,
I don't
because
really see it.
Well, it's the dystopian future kind of thing, you know.
That's not easy. Well, aren't we done with that at this point? Like, yeah, I mean, that's not in the cycle of movies.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Jenny. I mean, like dystopian, any of that kind of stuff is not easy. Because you got to give it a decent mix of morbidity or depression or melancholy, but not to the point where you're like, it's like your fucking head's being stepped on or kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like Blade Runner, which to me is one of the best dystopian movies of all time. We talked about before. You don't get that feeling as you're watching it. You feel a ray of hope somewhere in the movie. And so it's not easy. And, you know, in Peter Jackson's defense, here's a guy who made probably one of the most epic trilogies. He did all the Hobbits too, right?
He did all the Hobbits. He did that King Kong spectacle.
Yeah, I have that. Yeah, the King Kong. I have that. I bought that DVD ages ago. It's all right. It's long. There's another one that you don't want to put on at midnight. That's like fucking 3.
Long as fuck. Yes.
Yeah, it's long as fuck. to quote a great co-host. Here's a guy who did probably one of the most epic trilogies. I wouldn't say The Hobbit was epic. I'm sure I didn't see any of the Hobbits, but
they were fun.
I'm sure those were good. Mm-hmm. But Lord of the Rings is probably one of the most epic trilogies in movie history. I mean, it won a fucking Oscar for Best Picture, and those kind of movies never win. Fucking Star Wars didn't win Best Picture, and that's probably the greatest fantasy soap opera, space opera movie ever, and it didn't win Best Picture. So, and it wasn't even the first movie, the trilogy that won, it was the last one. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's thinking, I don't know, what the fuck do I do next? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, maybe.
So, I mean, I'm not saying what he's doing is right. I'm just saying fantasy movies are fun. They're expensive. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. But like dystopian apocalyptic type movies are not easy to do because you've got to add a ray of hope to something that's utterly melancholy. And so, I mean, again, I didn't see Mortal Engines, so I can't quote whether that's what it was, but, you know, he probably is like, what do I do next with my life? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like maybe he's like sort of addicted to the world building aspect because there's a lot of that in his movies. I don't know what the chances are of a sequel this movie, but
well, it's from a book, right? Is it from a book?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, a movie where you put cities as on wheels, basically, in London. Yeah. London's a big – I mean, Hugo Weaving's in it, and he always gives a good report.
He's great, yeah.
But, I mean, back in – so, basically, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, in 2004, won Best Picture. I think it was just a culmination of the whole trilogy, because look at who it beat out.
Oh, for sure.
It beat out Lost in Translation. Good movie. I don't know if that's the best picture. Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. Okay movie. Mystic River, which I thought was good. And Seabiscuit. So it wasn't, in terms of a best picture, I don't think it was a strong field that year. And I think it was a culmination of just what it took to do that trilogy, because he did the whole thing, shot all three movies over 18 months in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
I'm sorry. Finish your point.
No, that's basically what I'm saying about Peter Jackson is, you know, yes, the movie did win Best Picture, but I think it was one of those make good Oscars. You know, it's kind of like how I feel about Denzel and Training Day. You know, right. I wasn't a big fan of that, but I think the Academy fucked up and he didn't win for Remember the Titans, amongst other performances. So.
Oh, what a tremendous movie.
So
tremendous movie. One of my favorite Denzels.
Oh, yeah, that's been on a bit on cable, too. That's one of those I get sucked in every time.
Who's in that? What's his face?
Ryan Gosling.
Yes. Who else is in that, too?
He's been in so many things. He was in Armageddon.
I'm praying. Anyway, now to compare that, it's amazing. Both of Harrison Ford's iconic franchises, the first movies, both were nominated for Best Picture. 1977, Star Wars was nominated. Annie Hall won that year, but that was that time in the late 70s when you know Woody Allen wasn't a fucking sleazebag, and his movies were moderately decent.
Well, we just didn't know he was a sleazebag yet.
Well, the other nominees were The Goodbye Girl, Julia, and The Turning Point. I don't even heard of the other movies. Now, the year that Raiders of the Lost Ark was nominated in 1981, Chariots of Fire won that year, and that movie's fucking awful. The other nominees were Atlantic City, On Golden Pond, which is actually a great movie, and Reds, which is another movie a Warren Beatty movie that's like fucking 5 hours. So
I've seen Atlantic City, not a good movie. Susan Sarandon.
No, Atlantic City, and that's another example. The following year, E.T. was nominated for Best Picture. I fucking love E.T. And Gandhi won that year.
Oh yeah, I've seen that too.
Now the other nominees were Missing, which is I think it's Sissy Spacek, Tootsie, great comedy, and The Verdict, another great movie of Paul Newman. So back then, they put movies like that in the Best Picture nomination strictly on money, because the Academy was a bunch of fucking snobs back then, and you know they didn't think that sci-fi adventure films had any kind of substance. But you can't not put a movie that made fucking $500 million and not think it's anything special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the time when Passes to India and all those other kind of movies.
Yeah, and Gandhi. I mean, I love Ben Kingsley, but that movie's literally like watching snow melt. That's how dreadfully boring that movie is. But I know, when I saw it, I was 9. So, I mean, you know, you don't think about that kind of stuff and go, wow, this is a really great movie. In any event, the premise is, talking about Peter Jackson, here's a guy who we wonder if he peaked with, mm-hmm. and now he's trying to find his next thing.
Right.
So I agree with you, Jenny, that maybe this was not the best course of action to take.
No, if you're looking at, like, dystopian like road films, the best one's already been made, and that's Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, good
so
movie.
just move on, have some foresight, Peter Jackson. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and then after that we had Mary Poppins Returns.
Missed it, damn it. Another movie that I wanted to see and missed mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, I
that'll be on Disney.
I fucking love this movie. It was like watching this movie, it was one of those movies when it just brought you back to a time when you saw the original. I mean, this movie literally could have come out 2 years after the original Mary Poppins came out. And I just had a smile on my face the entire time. There's some animated sequences in there which harken back to the days of hand-drawn animation, which I dearly miss so much.
Me too.
Being a huge you guys talk about, like, you know, I'm not into horror or whatever. I mean, I'm into sci-fi, actually. But I'm an animation nerd. That's my thing. Like, Disney movies... Mm-hmm. Any kind of, you know, go back to Looney Tunes, all that stuff. That's my one of my wheelhouses, and I dearly miss hand drawn animation. You know, I wish Disney would bring it back so badly. You know, you could still do the CG animated, whatever, Frozen, Tangled, whatever. But you know, give me more. I mean, I actually really love Princess and the Frog, which was The Last Hand Droid.
That's a great movie, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely, yeah, Scott, you've mentioned that you're a big Mary Poppins fan of the original.
I am.
So, and this is,
yes,
they did it justice. I mean, you know.
No, I'm definitely going to see it. No, there's no doubt. There's no doubt I'm going to see it.
Excellent casting. Excellent casting with Emily Blunt, and Lin-Manuel Miranda. They were all very good. Dick Van Dyke shows up. They wanted Julie Andrews to be in it, but she apparently doesn't have the pipes to sing it. And also,
no, she can't sing anymore.
She actually turned it down. There's a part towards the end of the movie, very small role. They wanted her to play. And she turned it down because she didn't want to take away the spotlight from Emily.
Mm-hmm. She's like, no, and she's right.
She is. Yeah.
She's right.
This is Emily's movie, she said. So, yeah, Mary Poppins Returns. I would definitely recommend. Hopefully they continue the Mary Poppins universe, I guess, franchise. So
question. A quick opinion before we move on.
Okay.
When we're talking about fantasy movies and stuff, would you consider The Sixth Sense a fantasy type movie, or is that just more like a thriller drama?
No.
Suspense thriller.
Suspense for
okay,
sure.
Okay, so it's not a. So pretty much, I'm just looking at all the years of best picture nominees. After E.T. in 82, there really wasn't a fantasy sci-fi adventure movie for best picture till Lord of the Rings: Return of the King won 21 years later.
Wow.
So after two straight years of Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T., there wasn't a best picture nominee in the fantasy adventure sci-fi realm until Lord of the Rings, the Return of the King won. And then after that, you don't even see, I mean, Finding Neverland, does that count? Probably not.
No.
Yeah, and even afterwards, you don't really see it again.
Well,
so it's interesting.
Oscars have always been, like, traditional and dramatic.
Yeah, really, exactly.
So that's not surprising.
Movies that nobody sees.
2009, Avatar.
Yeah.
Avatar was nominated in 2009.
I still don't get how that is the highest grossing movie of all time. I mean, I thought it was a good movie. And that land at Disney is fucking awesome, but
it's a blue person's version of Dances with Wolves.
Kind of, yeah.
Dances with Wolves with blue people. It's the same fucking movie. People on their land getting kicked off by others. It's the same fucking movie. There's another movie that reminds me of that too, but that's what it is.
Yeah, and the material, the element they're looking for is called unobtainium. Talk about being on the nose.
It's ridiculous.
James Cameron's real subtle.
Well, I'm telling you, Scott, if you get down to Florida, to Disney, to go to Star Wars Land, you need to take a day and go over to Animal Kingdom and go to Pandora, the land, the world of Avatar, and go on Flights of Passage. Fucking sick ride.
I'll go on anything. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's like almost you're on like a motorcycle kind of like ride vehicle, and then it's like a 3D CG kind of movie thing when you're on the back of a Banshee. I highly recommend it. I know Jenny's not into rides like that, but it's a lot of fun. I definitely recommend it.
No, we were talking about Silver Linings Playbook before. It was actually nominated for Best Picture in 2012. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Inception. There's a fantasy movie. That movie sucked. I hated it. But that movie was nominated in 2010.
How dare you, sir?
Kind of made my brain hurt.
That movie drove me bonkers.
People who didn't like Inception just didn't understand it, so that's all right.
There's not a crime in that. Not understanding it means it was too complicated.
No.
Yes.
No.
Guys, this isn't great debate. This is looking back.
If you want a good fucking Leonardo, that's his brother bag of donuts. If you want a good Leonardo movie, Wolf of Wall Street's pretty good. But of course, it's a Martin Scorsese movie, so you have to like cocaine. But in any event,
it also holds a record for the most. Uses of the word fuck ever.
Yeah, it's more than any mob movie.
Yeah, more than any Tarantino movie, more than anything.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? So, anyway.
All right, so after that, Scott Hurry mentioned that he didn't get to see it, but Jenny and I both saw it, which is Aquaman. Jenny, well, give us your thoughts on Aquaman.
Okay, so I think a lot of people had a lot of high hopes for Aquaman, given the Jason Momoa aspect, which everybody pretty much universally loves him, and the state of the DCEU, is that still what they're calling it? I don't know. Is in just terrible shape. I thought it was good. considering it was a DC movie, and it really pains me to say that. I don't think it was enough to turn around the franchise at all. I think they still have a lot of work to do. But as a movie, it was pretty good. A lot of things would take me out of it, like Amber Heard's hair, for instance. And yeah. Then she was not portrayed as the Mira that I enjoy very much. She was very expository and very, I don't know. There was just something off about Mira. She was just very not, she didn't have much depth to her. And the Mira that I love is just very fiery and confrontational and sarcastic and just haughty at times. And I didn't really get that from her. Visually, I thought it was pretty spectacular. There were a few moments that would sort of take me out of it, but not too badly. And also, I thought that Nicole Kidman pretty much stole the movie for me. When that secondary love story becomes, like, to me, more important than the primary love story, it kind of gives you a clue of what they're doing there and how good Nicole Kidman is in that unexpectedly. They did a really good job de-aging her. Not Marvel good, but pretty good.
Yeah.
So overall, I mean, it was pretty good, but not... I'm glad it did really well critically and financially, but I feel like I might have liked a more traditional take on Aquaman.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I actually enjoyed the shit out of this movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought what the DCEU needs is to stop taking itself so seriously and lighten up, and I think this movie has it on its way. I mean, look, I know Zack Snyder had a tragedy in his personal life, which kind of pulled him out of this franchise or this universe, but the guy was not the right guy to lead it. You know, it was way too dark, way too broody. You know, people just want to go, and they want to enjoy themselves, and, you know, look, you can't clone Marvel, but they went about it the wrong way, DC. They, you know, I grew up a DC fan, actually. I didn't really watch, you know, Marvel stuff. I mean, I saw Spider-Man cartoons, but I grew up on the Justice League, which was one of my all-time favorite Saturday morning cartoons. And, I mean, that's why I held such high hope for the DC Universe, because I loved these characters as a kid so much. And then, yeah, I thought it was fun. Like, Jason Momoa seems like just a good dude guy, and he's having fun. I mean, the casting was really good, outside of Amber Heard, as you said. You know, Tamara Morrison, better known as Jango Fett, plays his dad. Nicole Kidman plays his mom.
Oh, he was excellent. Yeah. Both his parents were amazing. I wanted to just, like, watch their story, yeah. Honestly. They were excellent.
I mean, I like the scenes, a lot of fantasy stuff, a lot of the CG. I'm a sucker for good CG. You know, an octopus playing the drums, which you know, according to, you know, our brethren here on Place to Be Nation, the comics guys, that is out of the Aquaman comics. Mm-hmm. You know, all these things. So they stay pretty loyal to the source material, from what I understand. But it's kind of like they took Black Panther and they kind of like inverted, I guess. Because if this was Black Panther, we would have been rooting for Killmonger, basically. Because that's kind of what Aquaman is. He's the heir to the throne, who's now an outsider.
Right.
So it's like kind of just based on the perspective you have. Is who you kind of root for, although Killmonger was kind of fucked up in some of his way he was doing things. Yeah. But
a little bit fucked up. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah. But I did enjoy Aquaman. It was a fun ride, basically, so to speak. Mm. You know, it's like those, like, you know, like Venom, like, you know, you go in with lower expectations, you walk out happier. It seems like, you know, when the bar is set yeah. really high, like something like Batman v Superman or something like that, you're bound to be disappointed no matter what.
I still love that movie, and I will defend it till I die, but okay.
I have yet to see the director's cut, which Greg and Nick have highly recommended many times. Yes, so
very, very good. That's the only cut that you need to watch, yes.
I mean, I thought there were some good parts to it, but on the whole, it was kind of like, ugh, you know, there were just things like that took me out of it. The whole Martha thing, and then also the fact.
I knew you were going to say the whole Martha thing. That, whatever he says.
That and the fact that Metropolis and Gotham were like basically like Brooklyn and across the Bronx.
Yeah.
That kind of like, I didn't realize
the whole
that.
Jolly Rancher thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
I get it, but I still love that movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, you could love it. I mean, I may go back and watch it again at some point, but and watch the version that you guys have all recommended, hopefully. I think, I don't know if I have it on DVD or Blu-ray, but if not, I will seek that out. And Scott, yeah, definitely see Aquaman. You know, it's a...
Oh, yeah, that's a blind buy. Mm-hmm. That's a blind buy. Yep.
Awesome. And then also that came out right before Christmas was Bumblebee. Now, I'm the only one that saw it, and I fucking loved it. I ended up actually seeing it twice because I went to see it by myself one night, and then my kids actually wanted to see it. So I went again, and there's some scenes on Cybertron in this movie. Now, if you grew up loving the Transformers cartoon, I quote unquote marked out big time. Just the sound effects, the character designs. I was like, this is a Transformers movie I always wanted. Thank you so much for finally giving it to me. Michael Bay can go suck an egg. You know, that guy is a great second unit director. Don't put him in charge of these franchises, you know. The Transformers movies, you know, the first one was okay. After that, he just kept taking a shit on my childhood. That's the best way to describe the Transformers. I'll still go see them, don't get me wrong. But I sit there like, no, no, don't. Why is this guy doing this? Why are you having Optimus Prime do this? I turn the... Did I break Jenny?
I love your PG-rated rants.
Yeah, that's funny.
I think it's the first time I've ever heard suck an egg on a podcast before.
Yeah.
That's old.
Also, he ruined Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but there's that.
Yeah, that wasn't that good either. I saw the first one.
No.
But yeah, no, that was a Ren Stimpy reference, actually. The whole suck an egg thing. But yeah, my PG reference after I just said he's shitting on my childhood. But yeah, I would highly recommend Bumblebee. I mean, John Cena was fine in it. I mean, it was very, it was minimal. I mean, yes, there's a lot of Transformers in the Cybertron scenes. But once we get to Earth, you only see a handful of Transformers, which is really good. It's a much smaller story, and they gave a really good backstory to Bumblebee and why he's how he got here and his whole purpose and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it gave me hope for Transformers movies going forward. And Scott, is that another blind buy?
Bumblebee, absolutely.
Yeah. Jenny, did you have you watched the Transformers cartoons, or is that a little before your time?
No, I did, and I think that you pretty much talked me into it because I was sort of on the fence about seeing it eventually, maybe Redbox or whatever. But yeah, I could see me watching it.
A fun soundtrack too. It's like one of those, like, it takes place in the 1990s, so it kind of hits you over the head a lot with the 90s music, and if you're a 90s fan. It really, hits home with you. And they also have You Got the Touch. It's played in it.
Oh, I love that. That's the best. You have to have that in a Transformers movie.
Yeah. So after that came out Vice, which I saw. I really enjoyed it. I actually thought, as great as Rami Malek was, and he deserved to win the Oscar, at the time, after I saw Vice, I turned to my girlfriend Ellen and I said, poor Rami Malek, because I thought Christian Bale was tremendous in Vice. The fact that he played Dick Cheney all the way from being a young man to an old man and kept that character, you know, consistent throughout the whole movie, I was partially convinced Bale was going to win it. So I didn't know how much Rami Malek was going to have behind him and support, because Bale's kind of like, you know, not that he's the old guard, but he's a proven Oscar contender before. And Raimi's kind of the new kid on the block. Hopefully it's not one and done for Raimi. Hopefully we see him back. But it was definitely, yeah, Amy Adams was very good in it. Sam Rockwell was really good, as George W. Bush. Kind of hammed it up a little bit.
And can I ask, was it played more like serious and political, or like comedic? Because it's really hard to tell from the trailers.
Well, did you see The Big Short?
Yes.
It's in the same style, because it's Adam McKay. Adam McKay did both movies. But you know who stole the fucking movie? Was Steve Carell as Donald Rumsfeld. He awesome. Steve Carell has turned into quite the character actor these days. You know, he's kind of following the Alec Baldwin route, I guess, where he was the lead guy, and now he's picking these parts where he gets to show up and have a lot of fun with the role. Like where Alec Baldwin was like the leading man years ago, and then he shows up in the movies like Along Came Polly or whatever, where he steals it. I mean, that was tremendous, that role. And then also a movie that I had no interest in seeing, and I probably never will because it looks so fucking stupid, was Holmes and Watson. I mean, I like Will Ferrell. I don't love Will Ferrell. I think he's one of the biggest overactors there are out there. I love John C. Reilly. I really want to see Stan and Ollie. They believe that came out last month or in January, which was him playing Oliver Hardy, along with Steve Coogan playing Stan Laurel in a biopic. Like Scott said, more biopics are coming, which I'm very grateful of. But yeah, Holmes and Watson was a humorous take on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's classic mysteries featuring Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Yeah, if I want to watch Sherlock Holmes, give me Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law.
Yup. And I'm a huge like Sherlock Holmes mark, and Will Ferrell is extremely hit or miss for me. But yeah, I would probably not watch this either.
What do you think, Scott? Or I didn't get to you guys, but Vice and Holmes and Watson, are those movies you want to seek out?
Vice, maybe. Depends.
That's a Netflix or something movie for you.
Yeah, probably. Holmes and Watson, I love Will Ferrell. So, that's another one. That's probably another. It's weird. I like Will Ferrell, but I don't know if I'd want to own any of his stuff. Like I was in, you know, it's like one of those things. Like I said the other day, I was walking, I think I was in Walmart, and I'm, you know, I always peruse the DVD Blu-ray section to see if there's anything cheap on sale. And I think it was probably the only two that I would. Oh, it was Anchorman, and it was like $8. And for some reason, I didn't buy it. And I'm thinking, it's fucking Anchorman. The movie's great. And I didn't get it. I don't know why.
I have it.
Semi Pro. Oh, you know what else was on? Yeah, you know what? I think Semi Pro would be the only one I would probably buy, because even Talladega Nights was like, I think it was $9.99, and I didn't grab it. You know, I don't know. It was weird, but I would probably see it.
Shake and Bake.
See it. Shake and Bake.
Shake and Bake.
I think my favorite. I love Anchor. I do love Anchorman, and I like the two Anchormen. But I don't know why I didn't buy it, but. If Semi-Pro was ever on sale, like cheap, I would probably get it because that's probably my favorite. Old school.
I just picked Semi-Pro up. I think it was an FYE. It might have been a used copy. I don't know. For a future episode of one of my other shows.
oh, my God.
Yes.
Fucking, you just said, I guess you didn't get your mortgage then if you bought it at FYE. Close.
No, I actually paid. I think I paid $6 for it.
Yeah, it was probably somebody's coaster.
Well, I haven't taken out the package yet, so we'll find
stuff
out
there. But anyway, I'll probably that those are both probably Netflix watches.
Mm-hmm. All right, anything we didn't cover, guys, here tonight? We miss out on anything that you guys wanted to maybe speak on, or you guys? Yes.
The only thing I would say about Creed 2, which I would probably lose whatever cool points I have amassed at this point, which is probably not many, as not being a huge Rocky fan, but right around the time that Creed 2 came out, I did watch the first one and actually loved it a lot. So I will definitely be watching Creed 2.
Hmm. Yeah, that's up on my list.
Oh, I think that's many points on the cool list.
Yeah.
You should watch the Rockies, but
I tried and it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, I stopped at Rocky 4. I think I didn't see the one. What was,
well, everybody stops there. Oh, Jesus, Andy, it sounds like you're the only one. Everybody stops at Rocky 4.
Well, I mean, I didn't even make it to the first one.
I don't get it. How did you not like? Well, that's another. That's an off. That might be a deleted scene from this DVD, from this audio CD. But anyway. Yeah, I liked Rocky too. Creed too. I think there were some good movies in this stretch. Obviously, we don't have to talk about Captain Marvel, but I think we're going to have a good stretch coming up.
Mm-hmm. We're starting to get into the good time.
Obviously, you know, in terms of press and in terms of media hype, it's going to the next, you know, there's pretty much two movies that'll eat up a ton of hype between now and the end of the calendar year. From now till probably July, maybe even June, you'll have Endgame. And then once Endgame wears off, we're all in on episode 9. So those are the two real superhero, superpower movies that are out for the rest of the year. There's going to be some good stuff coming out this year, no doubt. But in terms of the mega media push, you know, San Diego Comic-Con and Star Wars Celebration, all the big cons over the next few months, it's going to be Endgame. And then when Endgame's out already and that kind of, not fades, but that kind of, you know, has its window, then we step on the gas for episode 9. So, as a matter of fact, I think from what we heard from Kathleen Kennedy, and a buddy of mine is going to Star Wars Celebration this year. I'm sure it'll debut there, but I think we're almost guaranteed that the Endgame trailers will include an episode 9 trailer. So Sweet. It's almost like a bridge. Like, all right, we've gotten to Endgame. Congratulations. Now we hit the pedal for the next one. So, but there'll be some good stuff. Like I said, Rocket Man. What else?
Well,
some of the good stuff coming out in the next few months. So,
well, coming up in April will actually be kind of, I don't know, I guess a separate, I don't know if I call it part two, but we're going to be doing Looking Forward. That's going to be our big summer movie preview. Basically, we're going to look at everything that's coming out from Avengers Endgame, which is April 26th through Labor Day. Hopefully, that's going to be a big episode. Jenny, you'll be on that, mm-hmm. correct? And so will, so will your cohort, Miranda. Scott, hopefully you'll be able to make it that night. And as well as I'm going to try to get many other voices from PTB and Pop, because we're going to do a summer movie preview, but also we're going to play a game. Now, other podcast websites have done something similar. And you know what? Why not? Why not us? It's going to be called the Summer Movie Wager. The terms are yet to be determined, but basically everybody that's on the show that night will pardon my dog who seems to be making noise at the moment.
Fucking microphone of yours.
I know. It's too fucking sensitive. I'm just like, Toby! Hey. All right, thank you. You can scratch yourself later.
No way.
He interrupts my read. Anyway, so what we're doing, the Summer Movie Wager, we're all going to pick 10 movies in order that we think are going how well they're going to do in domestic box office. And there's going to be a little point system that I'm going to put up there also to let everybody know how we're going to run it. And then you pick three dark horses, as well as we're adding a twist that I don't think anybody else does. But the bonus question will be, what do you think the biggest box office bomb will be? And we're talking about domestic gross when we play this game. And then there will be a prize or a wager of all the panelists that night. I have yet to tell them what that wager is, so I'm going to reveal it shortly to all of them once I have all the guests lined up. And also, I'm going to try to do it on the Pro Boards as well, where we have people, you know, everybody giving their picks in, and whoever wins that will get a separate prize. So just have some fun over the summer, kind of like, you know, have some vested interest in how movies are doing, you know, pay attention to Box Office Mojo. But in the meantime, we have some movies coming out. Maybe we can just give a little quick speak on whether you're going to see it or not. Now, Jenny and Scott, you guys are horror fans. Were you fans of Get Out?
Yes.
Yes. I thought it was an excellent movie. Are you going to see Us, which comes out this weekend?
Yes.
That's a sequel,
actually,
right?
No.
Yeah. No, it's a separate movie from Jordan Peele.
Oh, okay.
It looks fucking scary, though.
Yeah, it looks so good. Mm-hmm. I'm actually seeing Shazam early this weekend, but I would like to sneak to the theater to see Us.
Yeah, Shazam looks fun. It looks like Big as a superhero movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Scott, no, that'll be good.
Yeah. What about
I'll see Shazam.
Dumbo? You guys have any interest in seeing Dumbo?
No, I do not. Like I said, I'll sob quietly in my home if I'm not going to the movie to sob.
Why do we need a live-action Dumbo? Well, what the fuck is wrong with the
They're doing live-action. I'm curious to see what they do. Because the original Dumbo is only 63 minutes. So I want to see how they made it into a two-hour movie. And I think it's the first time we see Danny DeVito and Michael Keaton together since Batman Returns. So I'm interested in it. You know, my kids have said no. So I'm like, okay, I'll see it on my own. I'm a Disney mark, like I've said, so I'll go check it out. I mean, I don't know if they want to see Aladdin or Lion King either, but I'm going to be there. You know, just take my money.
I am not seeing Aladdin. That looks fucking terrible.
Come on.
I mean,
another one we needed. Really, somebody is going to try. I mean, and look, I have nothing against Will Smith, but we're going to attempt to do a better Aladdin than Robin Williams. I mean, really?
I don't
know. What's next? Do we make a Dead Poet Society? I mean, come on.
I don't think they're trying to do a better one. I just think they have all this IP sitting around, and they're like, fuck. Mm-hmm. You know what?
Yeah.
We invest $100 million or so into making a live-action movie. We could make $1 billion worldwide. I mean, this movie is going to – Aladdin's going to do a shit ton of money. Even if it doesn't do well domestically, it's going to make so much money worldwide in domestic – I mean, foreign box office. What about Hellboy? Are you guys interested in seeing the new Hellboy with David Harbour?
I just
love David Harbour.
I do too. I actually just bought the first original one, the Ron Perlman one. It was like $5 the other day. I grabbed it. So I'm going to watch both of those and then see. I like the book. I remember reading the book. I'll definitely see that. And David Harbour's great. It actually comes out. Let me see when it comes out, because I think it comes out around the time. Probably not, but let me see.
It comes out like two weeks.
Comes out on the 12th. All right, not even close then, because I thought it was the summertime, because July 4th is season 3 of Stranger Things, so I thought it was going to be kind of around the same time, but no, it comes out April 12th. So okay.
No, yeah, looking forward to Stranger Things. I haven't seen the original Hellboys, but Ron Perlman. But yeah, this kind of interests me though. I saw the trailers look good, so you know, I'm down for a different superhero kind of movie or comic book movie, if you will.
Oh, there's a biopic. I think it's one of those Fox Greenlight things, but they're actually doing a biopic on Tolkien.
Oh,
That's coming out May 10th.
All right. Well, you know, if you think it's going to do that well, you can add to your list.
Oh, no wager. I know what Jenny's going to want to talk about.
What?
John Wick 3.
Oh, fuck yeah.
John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum, comes out on May 17th.
All right, so.
Yeah, there's a bunch of fucking shit, great shit. That's actually the weekend before Aladdin comes out. Oh, Guy Ritchie's doing that? Oh, we talked about that. Guy Ritchie's doing that, too. Oh, no, we can't, you know, we didn't mention, holy shit, on the same night, May 31st, Rocket Man and Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Oh.
Same night.
That's kind of two different audiences, though, for the most part.
It is. Well, it is. Well, true. Well, but,
like, you and I are going to see both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the following week, June 7th, obviously these are all Fridays, is Dark Phoenix, which is the last remnants of the X-Men stuff from Fox.
Unless they don't release New Mutants, which looks – I have no interest in New Mutants.
Are they seriously doing another version of Shaft?
Yeah.
It's like a third fucking version of Shaft.
Three generations of Shaft.
Well, Richard Roundtree's at least in it. So
and Samuel Jackson's in it, too.
Yeah. That's out the same week as Men in Black International. That's going to be good. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Toy Story 4. Actually, you know what comes out the same day, June 21st? Toy Story 4 and the Child's Play reboot.
Ooh.
And then you know what comes out? This won't be for you, Andy, but you know what comes out the next week, Jenny, is Annabelle Comes Home.
Oh, fuck no. Creepy doll, no.
See, for horror, I'm looking for It Part 2.
I still have to see It. I think that's the fall, right?
Oh, It Chapter 2 comes out in September.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So that won't be part of our wager.
Coming out in September. Did you want a Downton Abbey movie? Oh, good God.
So many unanswered questions.
9 hours.
All of our next episode, Jesus, Scott.
Well, I'm ruining it, so that way.
Yeah,
well, no, he's teasing.
Rambo 5, Last Blood. That's what I'm winning. No, I'm just,
oh God.
Yeah.
So yeah, out to everybody. Start doing your homework and get ready
that's
for
what
the.
I'm doing. Give everybody homework.
Yeah. Well, you know, you want to win this wager.
Exactly.
So I mean, we're.
What are we betting for? Cash.
So okay. Well, I'm going to reveal the wager, and you guys have to agree to it. Basically, right. Everybody who appears on the podcast is going to agree, whoever wins gets to pick a movie. Now, keep it clean. And the rest of the panel have to do it with them as a live watch. Any movie. So it could be...
Why do you have to keep it clean, though?
Well, no pornos.
Well,
D'Amato's not going to be on it, so... Sorry, I think we're safe. So, like, if there's any, like, whatever movie you've always wanted to do a live watch on, you know, that you want to make, you know, me, Miranda, Scott, if like I get Greg or Nick or Russ or Tim or any of those guys to be on the show, all of us have to do a live watch of whatever movie you guys, the winner wants to do.
Okay. For a podcast or just for fun?
Well, why do it if we can't, you know, broadcast it?
Oh, definitely have to.
Well, agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the winner for the non podcast guests. So if you're not on the show and you want to participate, the winner of that will get to pick and be on an episode of Laughing Theater, and they get to pick the movie. You think that's a prize?
We'll see.
Did you not listen to the Caddyshack episode that Scott and I did?
They're redoing Midway? Wow, I didn't know. Wow, yeah. No, it's
your prize. I will force you to be on my show and do work so I don't have to do anything.
Hey, come on.
Freak Out Drive-In presents Behind the Green Door.
Hey, come on. The trivia, what was it? What was the contest you get at Scott for Place to Be podcast? That the great Callum McDougall won?
He named every single person that participated in the Christmas special. And he got to be – he picked whether to be on the next episode of Place to Be podcast – an episode of Place to Be podcast or main event. He picked main event, so he's going to be on the WrestleMania preview.
Awesome.
I'm game for that. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm just I'm sorry. I do apologize for like firing off all the second half of the movies, but I just didn't realize that there were so many fucking like reboots coming out this year. I'm sure we'll talk about. Now I have to be on April 22nd because I didn't realize there's a bunch of fucking reboots coming out this year.
9-hour podcast.
I know, really. On fucking. I mean, they're doing a new Charlie's Angels. I didn't know that.
What? Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. With what's her face.
It's Kristen Stewart, yeah, Kristen Naomi Stewart. Scott, Stewart, Ella yeah. Valinska. Patrick Stewart's in it? Seriously? Yeah, is he Boz? Yeah. Or is he fucking Charlie?
Charlie, I think.
Really, a British Charlie?
Good morning, Angels.
John Forsythe died, so. Hello, Ian, because John Forsythe died. So. Yeah. All right, anyway.
Anyway, so Jenny, what do you got coming up here on the on your shows, on both feeds, actually? Now you're on the wrestling feed. So what do you got coming?
Well, on the wrestling feed, I was just on an episode of the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, talking about some MSG from the 80s. So that was fun. And then we have a new episode of Talking WCW coming out this week, and it is focused on the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. And so on the pop feed, I have The Sassies, which is the newest episode of Geek and Sassy. It's our award show. And then you and I are going to record an episode of Freak Out Drive-In the next week.
Mm-hmm. Looking
and
forward to it.
And then there's a Talk and Pop tentatively scheduled, so I'm not going to mention that just yet.
Okay. Well, leave a little up to the imagination. Mm-hmm. Scott, what do you got coming up?
My favorite answer ever, absolutely nothing. I am taking this is my last podcast for the next 13 fucking days. It is so great.
Wow.
Yes. Well, we're taking an extra week off for main event because the week of WrestleMania, we're going to do our big preview, as I just mentioned. So that week, the first week of April, that's the next Place to Be podcast, the March 89 Saturday Night's main event with Mr. Peter Winson. And then that week is also, again, the WrestleMania preview. Andy, you'll be on. Mm-hmm. and a few others. We'll preview the whole weekend. Jenny, you're going to be on the recap. I'm already booking you now.
Am I?
I want you on for the recap because I want your not only for the wrestling part of it, but I kind of want your take on your, you know, the Northeast and the tri-state area and your
first visit,
your first visit to NY/NJ. So we're going to,
I'm sure I'll have much to say about the parts that I remember of that trip.
That's right. That's right. So it'll be great. So anyway, so that's coming up. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up in April. April's going to be a busy podcast month for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe Place to Be podcasts. Andy, we'll be doing a fucking shit of ton of stuff.
Yeah.
We'll be doing Looking Forward. You know, he's got so many fucking shows. I don't even know that. They're all like one long show. We're gonna do looking for. I'll be on this gambling. You know, losing a finger if you don't get the right movie, and then of course we'll have the next year in pop, 1975.
That's kind of 74 just went up yesterday.
Yep.
Check it
out. Yeah, so I'll be incognito for the next in the next couple weeks, but yeah, no. When we get to April, things will be hopping again. But check out both the Place to Be Pop. I want to pimp it again. Todd Weber, who manned the Place to Be Nation Pop feed, and of course myself, who handles the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. Great shows all the time. I got to say, Jenny, I want to say it here. Talking WCW is a great show. You guys are.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, I've given a listen.
You guys are awesome, and now your next episode is my favorite guy of all time. So, I'm looking forward to that. So,
well, we did something different, I think, with him. Like we wanted to, because there are so many great Ric Flair matches to choose from. I think we picked some sort of maybe one classic one and one that you didn't expect us to, and things like that. So, I love that show so much. Mm.
Yeah. So
yeah, I think we need a WCW retrospective on the wrestling
always.
Feed.
Yes. No, I agree with it.
I mean, you know, we can't forget about them, you know, because they were they made, you know, without them there was no Monday Night Wars, there was no, you know, it didn't light a fire under Vince and everybody else over in Titan Towers to up their right. game. So yeah, you know, the competition is good for. I hope AEW does well because I want to see some good competition and make everybody start bringing their A game.
Well, I think we'll talk about a lot of that on Main Event because pretty much after WrestleMania weekend, the big thing will be obviously Double or Nothing, which will be Memorial Day weekend. So we'll talk about that on Main Event and some of the other shows, of course, here on the feed, you know, as we get closer to that, too. So yeah, busy time on PlaceMeNation.com and your two tremendous podcast feeds. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, for myself, like Jenny mentioned, I will be joining her. She graciously invited me to come on Freak Out Drive-In. And we're going to be doing my favorite subgenre, I guess, of horror. I'm not going to say what it is, but if I'm going to pick a horror movie, this is the kind of horror movie I'm going to watch. And then I'm recording a couple of episodes of Laughing Theater with Glenn Butler is going to be on one. And then the manager, Todd Weber, is going to be on another one. I'm not going to say what movies we're going to do, so you just have to wait and see till they're dropped on the pop feed, but they're a lot of fun. One is from the 80s and one is from the 90s. So that's all I'm going to say with that. And then also I'm looking to hopefully do a great debate sometime in April and hopefully the week before the big summer movie preview, which is all going to be a lot of fun. And our little pop movies group, I'm trying to get as many on there. I'm sure the comics masters of Nick, Greg, Tim, Russ, all the guys, Ben, we'll all be doing their deep dives on Endgame and Spider-Man and all that stuff. So we'll talk about that, and we'll focus a little bit more on some of the other stuff. And just have fun and hope that we get some good participation for our summer movie rager, and it's something we can maybe do, you know, every year as long as we can. So, yeah, pay attention to PlaceMeNation.com. New articles going up almost daily now. Going to be a lot more focus on the website coming soon. Hopefully some new voices and some more regular columns. So look for that in the upcoming months. Also, like the PTBN Grays Candy Tournament, we're getting close to the end of the first round and moving on to the round of 64. And Easter Sunday, we'll crown the winner. And, you know, probably going to be somewhere around the Snickers, Reese's, Twix. You know, those are the heavy favorites right now. But you never know who could come up and take over and pull an upset. But anyway, and then look for that. Once we get through this tournament, more tournaments will be down the road and lots of fun. And just keep paying attention to Place Domination, all of our content that we put out there, whether it's written or audio. So, for Scott Criscolo and Jennifer Smith, I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for looking back, and we'll see you on the next show. Take care, everybody.
The next show, because he can't remember which one it is.
Watch it. You created this monster.
It's okay. Fucking okay.
Oh, God.